connections between Islamic terrorist groups and white supremacists in the United States that are not being investigated because certain managers, all the way up apparently to the director of the FBI, want to protect themselves.
Right.
Is that fair?
That is fair. You know, that the managers are more interested in protecting their careers than doing what they're paid to do, which is protect national security.
There's so many problems in the FBI, folks. I mean, one of the things that's always been talked about, frankly, since I worked on the department overseeing Homeland Security in Congress when I was there, and there were huge computer problems. They had several different systems. They couldn't talk to each other, they couldn't investigate computer crimes. Here at a time when Al-Qaeda is using the internet and email is vital to sift through, have they fixed some of these computer problems at least, Mike?
Well, not according to the reports. I mean, they're still talking about being years away from having a functioning computer system. You know, and you saw the National Security Letter report that the IG did about how the FBI has mishandled their authorities in that area, and that they were not keeping records of how they were using this stuff, and don't even know how many of these letters they've issued, and whether they were appropriately issued or not. So it doesn't appear that they've been prepared.
The amazing thing to me is you know, we have the Downing Street memo. They fixed the facts around the intelligence, and we have a ton of evidence that I've brought forth, Richard Clark has brought forth, Paul O'Neill has brought forth, certainly I'm not the only one, that in essence there would be a flood of information, and people like Dick Cheney would pick out one tiny thing that supports him and reject tens of thousands of other pieces of data that don't support his theory, what he wanted to do. And then what happens at the end of the day is the president blames the intelligence. They blame George Tenet, CIA, for allowing him to lie to the American people about the nuclear stuff that Saddam Hussein was supposed to be getting from Niger. They blame the intelligence agencies for messing up weapons of mass destruction. Oh, they're always blaming the agents. And what we see is when the agents try to do their job, they get stopped.
Right.
I don't know if you have a comment on that. That's me just sort of going off. But is that fair?
Yeah, it is fair. And I mean, in this case, you know, just the fact that these two groups are willing to work together is something the intelligence community at large should know about. And the FBI has been denying it for 4 years.
So they continue to deny that Islamic terrorists are trying to work with white supremacist organizations.
They were denying that right up until Grassley made the transcript public. So we'll see what their response is now.
I'm sure their response will be, how dare you, Grassley, for making the transcript public, and we're going to try to go after you, I guess. Isn't that the way they do things?
Well, they released the transcript to his office unclassified, and it was never classified. So, you know, they don't really have much to go after him about.
In terms of hope for the future, I try to leave on an optimistic note. It's hard in this story. One hope, I assume, is that you're asking everyone who's listening to this broadcast to call their member of Congress, call their senator, and to pass the Whistleblowers Protection Act.
That's certainly a first step. And then just, you know, implore Congress to get very aggressive in their oversight. You know, the National Security Letter report is a peek behind the curtain. But all these programs that are run secretly have those same problems, and it's really up to Congress and the American public to find out what's going on, because it's their right to know how these agencies are operating.
And let me just suggest this. In hindsight, Mike German, maybe an agent who discovers wrongdoing should not go to their boss, should not go to Director Mueller, but should go directly to members of Congress who should protect their identity so they won't be retaliated against. Is that the message for agents at this point? Don't trust your bosses. Go to Congress. They're the only ones that will protect you.
Certainly, I wish I had gone to Congress earlier. I mean, I think I probably would have gotten better protection if I'd gone to Congress earlier.
It's an amazing story. Mike German, in my view, you are an American hero. I think you will be vindicated, and I'm very honored to have you here on the Inside Scoop. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
That's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope you've enjoyed this very special show. Tune in next week for more of the Inside Scoop.
bomb killed 28 and wounded 52 in Fallujah this morning. The attack occurred during a funeral.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Well, howdy! Oh, 6 minutes after the hour, Tuesday evening here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. And I'm awfully glad to be with you this evening. Welcome to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I want to start somewhere this evening. Let's just go straight to a story. It's very easy for us to go to the dead Republican senator or the upcoming debate among the 10 little idiots. But instead of that, let's go to a different place, because you know I do have a taste for legal cases, and you know that free speech and censorship are issues that are very, very near, and where free speech is concerned, dear to my heart. With that in mind, we have a conversation slated for just a matter of minutes from now, centering on this issue, because, as you know, the courts today threw out a case of censorship, or perhaps protecting the public decency, depending on how you look at it, for alleged dirty words in the networks. And we are joined right now, and I'm very appreciative of his taking time to join us, Mr. Robert Peters, who is the president of Morality in Media. He's in New York. Mr. Peters, are you with us, sir?
Having me.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you joining us. Obviously, your organization would be, I assume, upset at this ruling today. Is that correct?
Well, I tell you, I've mixed emotions. In my opinion, it could have been much worse, and I say that because I think the networks were hoping that the Second Circuit would find one reason or another to declare the broadcast indecency law unconstitutional, period. And they didn't do that. In fact, they really decided the case on what I think was a very narrow basis. They said that a particular new policy that the FCC adopted a couple of years ago, or let's say within the last couple of years, that they hadn't adequately justified it, and therefore it was not valid, and they sent the case back to the FCC to give the FCC another chance. Now, I should add that a couple of the judges expressed their opinion that the networks were right about everything, i.e. that the law is unconstitutional. But I'll tell you, if I were a betting man, I would say at this point in our country's history, five judges on the Supreme Court aren't going to agree with them.
I tend to concur with you, and frankly, I'm sadder about it than you are. But Mr. Peters, where this is concerned, based on what I can understand of your organization, you're concerned about these kinds of words promulgating the public airwaves out of concern for families, out of concern for the well-being of children. For instance, and let me get your thoughts on this, Rush Limbaugh, okay? We're all familiar with who Rush is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had my children in the car one day, and it was, you know, during the time that Rush is on the air, and frankly, I like to listen to talk radio. We were going down the highway when Rush began doing a story about a woman who had had transsexual surgery. Okay? I'm not kidding. And I wound up having this unpleasant discussion with my kids, because there's Rush Limbaugh, a right-wing family values icon, doing, and he did this joke three or four times. He did the punchline of the joke three or four times, and the punchline of the joke was, and the woman, and you know the name of the operation? It was an adidectomy. I had to talk my way through that with my kids. Why is it that and I guess what I'm asking here, Mr. Peters, can you find a difference between, say, a stray microphone at a football game that hears a football player go, "Oh," fill in the blank, and say a right-wing paragon of virtue, Rush Limbaugh, screaming that euphemism for the male genitalia 3 or 4 times during family listening hours?
Well, I tell you, it's a good question. Part of my answer would be that the law, the indecency law, doesn't, and I don't think it was ever intended to forbid discussion about sex over the public airwaves. So, where you draw the line, admittedly, isn't difficult. I think some of the guidelines that the FCC set forth a couple of years ago, I guess it's a few years now, make some sense in terms of the level of explicitness. Is there a political or other purpose for whatever the discussion is? I mean, admittedly, the guidelines are loose, but I assume if Rush Limbaugh was talking the way he was, at bare minimum, that discussion would have political value in terms of the First Amendment, which would give it some extra protection. Does that mean that Rush Limbaugh was right in doing what he did? I don't think so. But, I mean, I tell you, my perspective on the broadcast indecency law, I sometimes tell people, I said, I don't think that, my goal or people who agree with me, that our goal should be to get rid of everything on broadcasting that might offend us. I kind of look at the broadcast indecency law as setting some bottom line limits, because if we don't have any bottom line limits in a medium that goes into virtually every home and that's accessible to kids, then we're going to have a sewage disposal for a communications media.
Well, now, when you use the word broadcast, Mr. Peters, do you include in broadcast everything that comes into the home, or are we talking about over the air and the so-called public airwaves?
Well, right now, broadcasting is limited to radio stations and the broadcast networks, Fox, NBC, CBS. It doesn't apply to cable. It doesn't apply to satellite, in my opinion, without any question. I don't think it's not my opinion. Satellite is a form of broadcasting. And to my knowledge, a lot of cable, at least at some point, it goes out over broadcasting. But right now, the law only applies to traditional radio stations and the old-fashioned television networks that broadcast their signal over the airwaves.
Would you want to see FCC language jurisdiction extended into, say, satellite, cable, internet, that kind of thing?
Well, for the moment, I'll stick with the cable and satellite. I would most certainly advocate it for packages of channels that are in effect a form of basic service or one tier above it. As much as I hate and loathe HBO, I don't advocate that the indecency standard apply to those channels.
Because people have to pay to get it.
Well, I'll tell you, to me it's a compromise. I hope the people that run HBO go to you-know-where, that's my personal opinion. But I still, sometimes you have to have compromises, and I think a channel like HBO, Showtime, others where people pay specifically to have that thing come into their home, they, within broad limits, not no limits, but within broad limits, I'm willing to, live my life and try to ignore as much as possible.
You've got an off button and nobody's making you get HBO, in other words.
Well, I tell you, right. I mean, most people get their television programming, all of it, through cable. Another 10 or 15% have satellite. And for the most part, they don't choose what comes into their home. In my opinion, basic cable service channels are, it's a public form of media. It goes out indiscriminately. It's not like people are sitting there, I want this program or I just want these channels. You don't have those choices.
But isn't it a matter of context, Mr. Peters? In the last 6 years, for instance, and it bothers me most in a journalism context because we've got heaven knows it's weak tea to begin with, but what passes for journalism on the television and radio in this country is half terrified. I offer as an example, and I'd like your opinion, we have two people in the White House, George Bush and Dick Cheney, who have been held up to us by the right wing as pious Christian men. In the last 6 years, we have had patent, overt, over-the-top examples of them using a vulgarity that neither you nor I will use in this discussion. And the word begins with F. When it is a news matter where they say it in front of an open live microphone, the President and Vice President of the United States, do we not have the right as Americans to hear the physical evidence of their vulgarity?
Well, I tell you, I think sometimes you would. You know, I don't know what the networks did with
they bleeped. They bleeped.
Well, I tell you, you know, I don't think an awful lot is missed by you. I'm a newspaper reader. I'm not a big fan of television. And I mean, you know,
the newspapers wouldn't print that word.
Well, I tell you, but you know, they give you the, you know, the first letter. Sometimes when it's really bad, they'll give you all the gibberish signals. But typically, they'll give you the first and the last letter. You know what it is, but they don't spell it out. I think that's a nice compromise. It tells people, kids in particular, that this isn't a nice word. But in the interest of news, they're giving you enough of it to figure it out. Now, on television, if you know what's going on, you can probably read Dick Cheney's or President Bush's lips and see that word that they're talking about. And, of course, it's a subject of news that they're going to somehow communicate which word it was anyway. But, you know, certainly from the FCC's perspective, had a broadcast network aired those words in a news context, there's no way at this point that the FCC would have find the stations on indecency.
But wasn't that the intent of these massively increased fines to make sure that nothing like that could ever get said?
Well, I tell you, you know, for better and worse, and I think it's a little bit of both, I think the FCC is too lenient on news organizations or news programs. But on the other hand, I think it's part of a compromise. The FCC, you know, if a four-letter word is uttered in conjunction with a legitimate news story, something of having genuine news value to the public, if a broadcast channel station decides to air the word and not bleep it, they aren't going to be fined under the indecency law unless it's really, really, really bad. Just the other day, the FCC claims that it has never fined a news program for uttering four-letter words, and that's probably true.
What about more artistic stuff, so to speak? One of my favorite non-vulgar examples of this is the great Johnny Fever character on WKRP in Cincinnati, who recounts in one episode how he was let go from one station for saying booger because the rules were so repressive around him. Innuendo. I remember a number of ABC television stations terrified to show one of the most patriotic, one of the most beautiful, heartrending films about war ever made, namely Saving Private Ryan, because there is a lot of use of language that really gets used on battlefields, and they were afraid that the Mad Mothers Against Indecency or whatever would wind up getting them fined $300,000 per F-word. Frankly, to the extent that they are representations of the real speech of America, don't Americans have the right, if they choose, to be able to hear these things?
Well, I tell you, you know, what goes on in the battlefield is heard by adults. And, you know, I use the example of Steve Bochco's NYPD Blue, an envelope-pushing program with four-letter words and other things. But I make the point that, yes, police officers in real life swear. I would add, living in New York City, they get in trouble for swearing if they're on duty. You know, there are complaints by citizens about cops who curse. They can get in trouble. You'd never know that from NYPD Blue. But my number one point is that just because cops swear in the locker room or while they're on duty on the streets doesn't mean they go home and talk to their mothers and fathers and wives and children like that. But when Steve Bochco picks up that language, he beams it potentially into every American home. I mean, you know, I saw Private Ryan twice, and if I have a chance to see it again, I will. I think it's a great film. I don't think that first half hour was suitable entertainment for 8 p.m. in the evening on broadcast television. Now, one thing to me, part of the compromise, they should have started the program at 9 so that at least small kids wouldn't have been unattended in the living room when the body parts started flying left and right. But they could have also very easily bleeped at least some of the language.
Well, I understand that, but to the same extent that I had to take Vulgarity by America's Leading Right-Wing Talker and turn that into an educational experience with my children. Are American parents incapable of doing that? Is part of, and what I'm getting to here, Mr. Peters, is part of the problem that we're having here, American parents' detachment from broadcast media, American parents' willingness, be they right, left, or center, American parents' willingness to let the idiot box be the babysitter?
Well, to some extent that's true, but you know, in today's world, you can't just talk about broadcast. You got cable, satellite, cell phones.
Okay, I understand.
The internet, God have, you know, some parents can keep up with it all. I would say a lot don't. But, you know, with another thing with Saving Private Ryan, I thought, you know, I could just imagine, you know, my mom, when I was a kid, used to, you know, she did some bookkeeping and she'd be out in the kitchen doing whatever the blue blaze she was doing. And, you know, sometimes Dad, you know, back in the day when you had one television. But I could just imagine when Private Ryan was being shown on broadcast at 8 o'clock, you know, kid, you know, small kids in the living room playing wherever, maybe in their bedroom, and ABC television is on or whatever network it aired. Mom has no idea that Private Ryan is coming on. She doesn't even know what Private Ryan is. And so, and these little kids are in the living room, and suddenly, and they look up, and the arms are flying, and the heads are flying. I mean, I'm talking about kids who would be old enough to understand that this is something horrifying. I mean,
wow, you just,
to me, that I in a country this big, I have to believe that happened, and happened more than once in many homes. Now, that, you know, that's not the end of the world.
And you raise another very, very interesting issue, Mr. Peters, because I'm much more concerned with my children seeing gun violence time and time and time again on the television than I am concerned with them hearing a questionable word. I can deal with the questionable word much more than I can them being bathed on a daily basis, frankly, in blood and gore.
Well, I tell you that I think Saving Private Ryan, my guess is that there would be a age of children that are old enough to understand what they're looking at, they would have been horrified. I grew up, you know, grew up in the 50s when, you know, all these horror movies used to come out. And I remember the first time my grandfather took my brother, older brother, and I to see the Monster of Black Lagoon, and I almost think pooped in the seat. I mean, my brother and I both used to get nightmares from watching these films when I was a child.
I still don't watch them, Mr. Peters.
You know, so, I mean, kids, I just thought, you know, I'll tell you, at one level, in terms of Private Ryan, I thought, you know, one compromise, start the thing at 9 because of the horrific violence. I mean, how, and not all kids, but I'm not a fan of, you know, you can't ban all violence from television. Nobody would advocate that, but clearly that's the problem.
Isn't the real problem, Mr. Peters, the slippery slope itself? I mean, imagine, if you will, a TV show you're watching for the sake of making it within our conversation. It's on at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's a comedy. And a cop walks into a barber shop, and that cop says, "Bob Peters here?" And the barber just looks up and says, "Nope, just cut hair." Now, that man, now, arguably at that point, your name, your very name, is an obscenity. When we go, don't we go down a slippery slope that is, as people who cherish free speech, we just don't want to be on?
Well, you know, I tell you, I don't think the, you know, you might say that, at least unless the FCC radically is transformed, which of course could happen, but I don't think at this point in the game that, you know, what you might call an isolated innuendo, you know, where I'm thinking of Bob Hope, you know, growing up again when we used to see a lot of, you know, television coverage of Bob Hope's, you know, appearances in World War II and the Korean War. And, you know, there was some risque stuff in there. And
Groucho,
you know,
Marx on, "No, ma'am, I love my cigar, but I take it out once in a while."
Yeah, but I, you know, well, that's in a sense an evidence that even though that undoubtedly offended many people, it didn't upset the country, and that, you know, Groucho Marx
was
thrown off the air, and Bob Hope wasn't banned, which, I mean, I've read most of the, you know, the FCC cases where they actually found something to be indecent, and I just, you know, I mean, obviously it's a vague, not, you know, not a clear memory, but I think I'm on safe ground in saying that with few exceptions, most of the stuff that has been found indecent was pretty rough and pretty clear, and it wasn't just a, you know, cute joke and then off to something else. It was persistent, you know, going down that gutter path and not having the good sense to stop quickly. That's what generated the indecency fines, not, you know, some cute little joke that made offhand. I'm not a fan of that stuff anymore, but I wouldn't take the time to complain about it either.
Well, you and I, at the beginning of this discussion, Mr. Peters, tended to agree that this Second Circuit ruling, upon going up in front of Scalia and Roberts and Alito Thomas and Kennedy, probably doesn't have a lot of chance of standing.
Well, I tell you, I'm not confident that that it wouldn't stand. I mean, but I think, you know, I'll tell you, interestingly, Justice Breyer has been pretty good on issues of concern to morality and media. Interestingly, Thomas has not been good. But I would be mildly shocked if Thomas would vote to, in effect, overturn the broadcast indecency law. You know, Thomas, but I don't know. I'm not, you know, listen, I'll tell you, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, I would bet the Supreme Court won't overturn the broadcast indecency law, at least at this point. But I'm not totally 1,000% confident of that. You know, there's a chance that five judges just might decide to do it. And I'll tell you, if five judges do decide to do it, Kennedy will be with them. He's been, from morality and media's perspective, Kennedy has been a disaster. On other issues, you know, I mean, from my values, he's often voted the right way, but on issues of concern to me at Morality and Media, he's been persistently part of the problem. And interestingly, Justice Breyer, more often than not, has been on the side that we take. Because he takes kind of a common sense perspective on this. I think he just has a sense that there have to be some restraints when it comes to depictions, discussions of sexuality, particularly when kids are at issue. And so he's been pretty good on these issues.
Well, you know, for me, I see the First Amendment and free speech as a rough and tumble place. And this country, you know, had a rough and tumble beginning. And people have used these words for a long time in fairly loose fashion. I wonder sometimes, and I'm not trying to be rude, and I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. I wonder sometimes if morality and media isn't standing on the shore and trying to shovel back the tide. I understand you don't want to hear these words, Mr. Peters. I understand. I don't mean my words. I mean the dirty words. And there are places where I don't want to either. It's one of those moments in parenting when you have to deal with these things. But we've got some pretty bright line rules around here, and frankly, I got kids who know what soap tastes like, because I know what soap tastes like. But I wonder if by doing what you're doing, you know, it's the whole camel's nose under the tent thing, and that's what scares me. Because when we find one word that's offensive, we can find another word that's offensive. And maybe it's context, or maybe it's innuendo. You seem very reasonable with regard to innuendo. There are those out there, sir, I assure you, who are not. And with that in mind, while I understand the nature of what you do, I wonder if it isn't counterproductive to what would be considered a robust and healthy republic.
Well, I came to the conclusion some years ago, I don't remember exactly when, that creating a morally perfect society was not my job. And God's job, if anybody's, but definitely not mine. So my goal is not to create a morally perfect society. On the other hand, I believe, you know, and I've been doing this stuff a long time, that doesn't make me right, but I strongly believe that no society is going to long prosper without some moral restraint. And thanks in good measure to the ACLU and the friends on the courts, we are moving in the direction of no restraint. My goal, I sometimes say, people ask me what I'm trying to accomplish, and you know, my goal is to reverse this tide that you describe. Now, I still think that's possible. Whether it's going to happen, I don't know. And then I say, you know, to push the tide as back as far as we can. But how far that will be will depend on the American people, and it will depend to some extent on the courts and legislatures. But I don't, you know, I mean, even if we got it back to the 50s, you know, type of morality, which I doubt that we'd be able to do, but, you know, let's just assume we got it back to the 50s morality. You know, it seems to me America had, had a lot of problems during the first 150 years of its history, but I think on the whole, America was a better place to live than most in the 1950s. So I suspect that probably most Americans, and parents in particular, would be happy to see at least public entertainment return to the same kind of values that the film industry and television and radio had back in the 1950s. But I'm certainly not advocating that we have, you know, a replication of the Taliban, what they would do if they took over America. I'm not a fan of the Taliban.
But, of course, Mr. Peters, there are those out there who believe that America is on the verge of being taken over by the Taliban, carrying a cross and wrapped in a flag, just like Sinclair Lewis described.
Well, you know, part of my answer to that would be that, you know, for at least mine, I've been doing this. I would admit that there is a tiny minority of Christians, I think, who would like to establish the law of God on America. But I just, an honest opinion, based on talking to a lot of people and doing all, I don't think most Christian people in America want to establish a theocracy. I think they want some restraints, and I think on the whole most Americans would agree with that. I don't say that there aren't some things that are being pushed too far from the religious end of things, but I mean, it's sometimes forgotten that throughout most of our nation's history we had laws that set some limits. It was only in the last 50 years, 60 years, that the courts began to want, you know, plank by plank, they began to dismantle the legal protections that we always enjoyed in this country in terms of vice and public indecency and obscenity and violent entertainment and all,
well, I think
prostitution
that,
and you name it. These laws were on the books from day one.
I think that's part of where I get a little bit disturbed, because you talk about the 1950s, Mr. Peters, and in the 1950s, a woman was still largely chattel property of her husband. In the 1950s, a little boy had a cotton gin chain wrapped around his neck and was thrown into a river, a little boy, for the crime of whistling at a white woman. I wonder if organizations like yours don't look back to a time that didn't exist. Because all of those things that were good shadowed an America that was very, very bad.
Well, I tell you, I'm not advocating that we go back to the 1950s, generally speaking. I'm just saying that back in the 1950s, the mainstream entertainment media had very real standards. And I would say probably in some cases a little bit, you know, too strict in terms of making sure that certain viewpoints didn't see the light of day. On that, I think, you know, I'm a strong supporter at one level of the old motion picture Hays Code, but I would agree that there were some provisions in that Hays Code that weren't necessarily the best thing. But no, I'm just, you know, referring to the 50s, back in the old days, you know, when the Motion Picture Association of America had a voluntary code, the broadcasters did, and you didn't hear a lot of filthy words in films and see people taking off their clothes and having sex and or talking about it on television and, you know, the radio the way Howard Stern does. And in that area of life, I think on the whole, America was a better place. There was pornography around, but hardcore stuff was openly sold in very, very few places. Unfortunately, Hugh Hefner, mainstream softcore, but even with that, we didn't have a situation like we have with pornography today.
So there's an excellent.
I'm also a child of the 60s, and I'm not a big fan of that revolution, but I admit readily that America wasn't a perfect place in the 50s and 60s, and part of the reason we had a revolution is because there were some things that needed to be changed.
Well, I think about the prosecution of Irving Claw. Was it Irving Claw? Was that his first name? Irving? Arguably, he was a pornographer. Or soft, you know, some would say by today's standards, softcore porn. But there was never any proof out there that this man was in any wise wicked, that he was, and that he wasn't providing something that there was a hunger for among a certain segment of the population. Can we not live and let live?
Well, I tell you, again, in terms of my goals, I don't think it's, you know, realistic that we're going to get rid of all pornography. So even if things go my way, I can guarantee if things go my way, there will be a lot less pornography. The content will be, of what remains, will be a lot less extreme than it is today, and it won't be pouring down into the mainstream of society. But I just kind of assume that unless we, you know, even with a total dictatorship, pornography would survive to some extent, and I'm most assuredly not advocating a total dictatorship. So, again, my goal is not per se to get rid of all pornography. I don't think that's realistic. But I don't want to be, I hate to see our society buried in pornography. There was an interesting article just over this past weekend, an Associated Press article written by a woman, and talking about the pervasiveness of pornography. But she wasn't talking about it so much with the male perspective. The big problem is addiction. But she was talking about how pornography, I mean, you know, girls are, you know, girls too are beginning to get, you know, what sex is all about. They're looking to pornography for their thoughts, because the guys they know are into pornography. And she, you know, raising some red flags of concern, is this really the message we want to send about sexuality to young people? Well, if we don't have any restraints on pornography, I can almost guarantee you that with the exception of those religious fanatics, this society will step by step begin to reflect not only the values but the lifestyles of the hardcore porn industry. It ain't far off. They say that, you know, it's said, and nobody's established it statistically, that pornography has become the number one sex educator of our kids. And God help us if that trend continues.
Oh, wow. Couldn't we?
Take a look at pornography on the internet. Do we really want a society, sexually speaking, that reflects the values and the lifestyles?
I know.
Of that,
you know, Mr. Peters, that's another thing that absolutely fascinates me. If you listen to, you know, I'm in the talk radio business, so I listen to the genre, right and left. You cannot turn on a Michael Savage, a Rush Limbaugh, a Sean Hannity. You can't turn on any of these right-wing talkers without being bombarded at least three times an hour with an advertisement for an herbal erection medication. And again, this is stuff that happens mostly going down the road in the car, and I'm going to wind up having to go back to the music channel because I'm having to have too many conversations with my kids.
Well, I tell you, my wife and I watch, I blame that on my wife legitimately watching too much television at night, but, I mean, these stupid ads are all over the place, you know. I mean,
well, you and me both,
we probably happen. We can thank in good measure Bob Dole for that. I guess he was trying to be cool, and so he lent his good name and reputation to erectile dysfunction ads, and it's gone downhill from there. But I don't think, you know, and I'm not.
Well, you and I both are named Bob. We both probably want to crawl behind the sofa from time to time when that ad comes on and says, "This is Bob. He's got a smile of confidence."
Yeah. Oh, there's no question about it. You know, there are moments when it gets whatever. But. But I don't, you know, I'm not trying, in this case, I doubt very much whether any talk show host is per se choosing the content of the ads that support their programs. ABC is making those decisions for the most part. And they're all over the place, you know. I don't like them either, but that's life.
It is, and I frankly, I'm more concerned. It's harder for me to get my kids away from advertising than it is to turn off a program. And I'm much less worried about the pernicious effects of whether SpongeBob's friend Patrick is gay. It's a cartoon character, after all. Cartoons aren't anything. Than I am about the commercial bombardment. You talk about pornography, okay? I can deal. I can go click at a bra ad on a television, you know, Victoria's Secret ad or whatever. But I've got a lot harder. I've got a lot more difficult job with the Sunday newspaper inserts that are, frankly, when you get to the lingerie section, they're softcore porn.
We had a call about that recently. Actually, within the last few months, a woman called about a Penny's ad, or I guess it was an insert in the Sunday paper. And my mother-in-law used to work for Penny's before she retired. And so when my wife and I visit, my mother, you know, back in the old days, Penny's catalogs and Sears were as wholesome as could be. But they definitely pushed the envelope in their underwear sections and whatnot. So not suitable, in my opinion. A Sunday paper ought to have higher standards, but at least one paper down in New Jersey, ran a...
Welcome to capitalism in America.
Well, whether it's sexually transmitted diseases or unwanted pregnancies or the growing trend of more and more young people, sleeping around rather than getting married. Sometimes I say, I will readily admit that religion's had some downside effects on this country, but while I don't think America was ever truly a Christian nation, the influence of Christianity, of Judeo-Christian thinking, was tremendous in this nation. And I sometimes, do people ever wonder sometimes, undoubtedly there are aspects of, biblical thinking, slavery and women, and some of the twisting of, in my opinion, biblical thought that had very negative effects on this nation. But, I think most people, if they'd stop and think of it, they'd have to recognize that Judeo-Christian values and whatnot had a tremendously positive effect. And right now we are in the process, as a people, of pretty much trampling those values and beliefs into the ground. And my point is that we aren't going to have the same nation. Now, in some respects, that might be better, because religious folks have done some not very nice things throughout our nation's history. But I would maintain that religion has had a much more positive influence on this country than negative. And if we throw out all the things that we once valued here, we aren't going to have the United States of America that at least my generation grew up to enjoy.
See, I don't want to...
radically different civilization, and my prediction is it ain't going to last long.
I don't want to throw anything out. I just believe that you wind up being better off if everything is in the mix. You say that you don't think things will last very long. In a way, I concur with you from a different perspective, Mr. Peters. A nation that seeks to become empire, it is historically provable that most empires last from 200 to 300 years. A nation that seeks empire is a nation that seeks its own doom. So I guess everybody has their issues. I'm far more concerned with the obscenity and the pornography that is the waste of the flower of American youth in the filthy, stinking, bloody sands of Iraq than I am with my kid hearing Booger on the air.
Well, I tell you, when it comes to hearing Booger on the air, I guess that used to be a childhood term. I can still kind of vaguely remember using that because he didn't have any more brains as a child. Booger.
Yeah,
that was the word.
Poopy head. Yeah, sure.
I mean, it wasn't a filthy word. It was a childhood word. You booger. I don't think most adults use that word, but as children,
Well, Mr. Peters, I want to thank you, sir, because you have proven something that there are those who would be shocked to find out can happen, that a hardcore progressive left leaning liberal. And someone with what would arguably be called conservative values can have a civil, enjoyable conversation on a broadcast medium and not have to turn it into crossfire. For that, sir, I applaud you.
Well, listen, I applaud you. I've enjoyed the conversation. And, part of what, keeps me going in this battle is, my goal isn't a perfect society. I think, my goal is to in one sense, And absolutely ridiculous, but to prevent America from coming apart at the seams, from, self-destructing. Now, some people would say, now, that's a very ambitious goal, and it truly is, and I don't have any delusions that I'm going to achieve it single-handedly. But it's certainly a much more modest goal than trying to create a perfect moral order. But part of my what keeps me going is my belief that, you know, that most Americans, if they stopped and thought about it, would agree that there have to be some limits. There has to be some restraint, some rules. And you don't have to be, right wing whatever, or, to left wing whatever, to understand that there.
Yeah, I'm not out to
let's
create.
Let's with environmentalism, I would agree that's a legitimate issue. I'm I don't necessarily think that all the, the people who are really into that, I think they can go overboard. But I would agree 1,000% that environmentalism is a legitimate, very real issue. And I think we have to address it. So, maybe somebody on the other side could understand that we really can't live like the proverbial people in Sodom and Gomorrah. If
we
start living like that, we are not going to be a nice place to live.
No, and we can't live like we're all in crossfire either. Like I said,
yeah.
I think it was just the night before last, or night last night actually, that I remarked that with everything short of the gunfire, which is a big part of it really when you come down to it, we are in a civil war in this country. There's no little Round Top, there's no little Shiloh yet, but that we are verbally there, we are emotionally there, and if we do not find a way to step back from the brink, we will find ourselves there in terms of violence. There's a study out that for the first time since the end of the first Bush administration, violent crime is on the rise in the United States again. We need to pay attention to that. In a world where disaffected young men that no one will speak to get guns and go out and shoot 30 people on a college campus, it's indicative. I approach that from a gun violence standpoint, but it's also indicative of a social problem. It's indicative of an unwillingness to talk, an unwillingness to reach out, an unwillingness to connect. And I don't want to see that.
I would see that more, that type of thing, more as an evidence of social disintegration, the coming apart of the traditional restraints. But I would agree with you that I often say that, I used to hesitate using the term cultural war, but I came to the conclusion that whether I like the term or not, it's what we are experiencing. And thankfully, it's on the whole been a nonviolent war. There have been some bombings and, the abortion thing. But, I would agree with you. At one level, we are in the midst of a sort of a civil war. And the old saying that comes to my mind is that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And therefore, for those of us who have some appreciation for this country and would like to see it not only continue, but perhaps even have a better day, which I somehow naively believe could still be, then, we're going to have to learn to resolve some of our differences in ways that we aren't doing a very good job of resolving them now, I guess.
Well, Mr. Peters, thank you very kindly.
Thank you.
And I've enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise.
I don't know. I'll mail you a nickel if you win in the Supreme Court, and you can get back to me if I do.
Well, I tell you, it may never get to the Supreme Court.
They may refuse cert. That's true.
Yeah. And or, I don't think, it's not inconceivable that the FCC could come up with a new policy that maybe two judges on that Second Circuit case would agree is constitutional and valid, and one judge would be very unhappy.
Well, thank you very kindly, and you
all
take
right,
care,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
But we're going to go to the phones, but before I do that, I want you to understand something. I could have screamed and I could have carried on. What's the point? I'm going, and believe me, there were plenty of places where I wanted to, and Agnes looking at me going, "Rrr," she gave herself a big ballpoint pen lobotomy during the conversation, okay? I mean, she did the Archie Bunker thing where she loaded the pantomime gun and shot herself several times. She did everything but strop the razor, pluck the hair, and cut her throat like Archie used to do. But this is conversation radio. You want screaming, frankly, you can go somewhere else. I thought I made my points. I understand his. I think he is on a... a benighted errand. I'm not as terrified of the culture as he is, and I think I made that clear. And I also worked in one of the great one-liners of all time. God doesn't hand you those opportunities very often. And he joked. It slowed him down. He got a kick out of it. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Oh, where do I begin?
Well, you can begin by saying that I should have screamed at him, or I wasn't mean enough to him, or...
No. Let's see. There's just so many places I could go on. Okay. I think the one I really want to mention, though, is perhaps children would not have to turn to pornography to learn about their sexuality if
we were honest with them about it. Sure.
Or B, the schools were not flat prohibited from teaching it.
Yeah, way back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, I had an author on. He was a young man. He had just graduated high school. He was a college freshman or sophomore, something like that. And he wrote a book called Generation Slut. And slut stood for sexually liberated urban teens. And it was a combination of fiction and journalism about his own generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real eye-opener for me. And, I figured out this was somebody who had grown up during a time when, you know, you couldn't talk about, and then the man puts the in the of the woman, and, you know, a baby is formed. You know, the simple mechanics of it we can't talk about. Please remember that here in wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia, parents are allowed to opt their children out of being taught biology. Okay?
It's ridiculous.
In case that they don't want them to learn about the dirty lady place or the dirty man place. No, dirty lady place, dirty man thing. Okay, I've got it square. You got to get right within the right wing terminology. So you're absolutely right in what you say, Susan.
And there's one other thing.
Yeah.
The 1950s. Let me see the time of Leave It to Beaver, black and white television, the Blacklist,
McCarthyism,
being conformists as army ants. You vote the way your parents vote because they told you to. If a girl got pregnant out of wedlock, she either got married or she shoved a coat hanger up between her legs.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Something really icky to her.
That Leave It to Beaver world never existed except in the mind of television, and I hope the man goes away with some food for thought. I'm sure that no one had ever told him that Rush Limbaugh on the public airwaves repeatedly used the word dick. Okay, I'm sure he'd never been told that. I'm sure he
lives in another planet.
I'm sure he had never bothered to stop and think about. About the fact that people of all ages are bombarded on a daily basis with herbal erection remedy concoctions. I'm sure that he came away with this with at least a little bit surprised. And frankly,
when you told him that.
Yeah. Well, frankly, the business about once upon a time the Sears and Roebuck catalog was pure. No. See, I went through this thing called puberty.
So did I.
And my best friends were the Sears and Roebuck catalog and National Geographic.
Yes, and well.
Oh boy, Agnes is cringing. She is physically cringing, Susan.
Well, yeah. With me, I was a little bit more scientific about it. I went to the library and read Masters and Johnson.
See, those had all those line drawings in it, though. I was purely prurient at that point.
Well, I was a girl. What can you say? We're more
we're
more cerebral.
Right, you get it by reading. I got to look. Agnes. God forbid we ever get the webcam in here. Mr. Peters will be very upset.
But you know, something like that. Well, something like Masters and Johnson I wouldn't even have access to it. No matter what age.
Well, and that's the thing. No matter how reasonable he sounded, and I enjoyed my conversation with him, Susan. no matter how reasonable he sounded, the problem is that those mindsets facilitate those people with whom he says he does not agree.
Yeah.
He says, you know, there's a section of Christianity that would like to turn America into a theocracy. Well, I don't think he knows how big the segment is. I don't think he's ever read up on Christian Reconstructionism and Christian Dominionism. He may be attending a Dominionist church right now and not even know it.
Exactly. And everything they would say will probably go right past him, because I get the feeling that he's really something of an innocent.
You could make that argument. You could make that argument, Susan.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to, one of the reasons why I loved Rocky, the original Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon.
Hey, Rocky, watch me put in, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because my son loved them as cartoons, and I would sit there and laugh myself silly because of the double entendres they were throwing right and left.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And
I get the feeling he's not.
Well, you know, there's a great private reel that was put out by the Warner Brothers guys, the guys in the studio there, for one of the Christmas parties. And it has Porky Pig, he hits his thumb with a hammer or something and says, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a gun. I bet you thought I was going to say son of a bitch. And it's precious. It's not dirty.
No.
It's funny.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and that's the one thing that I don't think these folks on the other side get, Susan, is that the first thing they get rid of in all totalitarian regimes, they become the most humorless people. There was nothing funny about the Soviet Union. Albert Brooks, the great comedic director and actor, released a movie a couple of years ago that was a scream called Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World.
And it's not there.
No, these are humor, and I'm not talking about ethnically, I'm talking about what has been done to them politically,
yes,
and culturally, humorless people.
Yes, utterly humorless.
I mean, I don't know, if a woman wearing a burqa tripped on her hem, that's a pratfall anywhere else in the world, but did you get your head cut off for laughing? Because you saw the soles of her feet?
If you were a guy, you didn't have anything happen to you, but she probably got stoned.
Killed. Yeah, an honor killing. Sure,
yeah.
Exactly.
I don't care what anybody says, that classic comedy routine of, I just went blank on his name,
George Carlin, sure.
Yeah. Carlin.
Yeah. Yeah, George Carlin.
That's hysterically funny.
Yeah, it
is. What anybody says is hysterically funny.
And, you know, I was trying to get a little bit of a giggle out of the guy, but so is Johnny Fever being removed from the airwaves for saying booger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he laughed when he said poop. Agnes counted. He said poop 4 times.
Yeah, I get the feeling that.
Yeah,
that's the extent of his.
He wants a world that is gone and he can't get back.
He wants a world that never existed. It only existed in Hollywood, and leave it to Beaver.
And that's where he wanted it. It's about confronting reality.
Yeah.
You see. If you can say to yourself, well, you know, they're not hearing it on TV, therefore they're not hearing it on the playground, you can abdicate some of your moral obligations with regard to your kids.
Do you know where I learned to swear? And I've got a vocabulary that would make a stevedore blush.
School?
No.
Church?
I learned it from my dear darling daddy.
Well, okay.
Daddy was a CPO on an aircraft carrier in World War II. Believe me, that was my baby talk. I picked it up from Daddy.
Well, I've told the great story. I'll tell it after the news. It's one of those great little family stories. We got to hit the news, though, Susan.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Have a nice day. Bye.
You too. Bye. And we'll be back with the news and more of your phone calls. We'll be back with more of your phone calls and the rest of the show after the news. Jesus, I'm addled. I said Jesus. Huh, you're listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
So good to me, I know, but I can't change. Tried to tell you, but you look at me like maybe I'm an angel underneath, innocent and sweet. Yesterday I cried, must have been relieved to see the softer side. I can understand how you'd be so confused. I don't envy you. I'm a little bit of everything. I'll roll into one. I'm a bitch. I'm a lover. I'm a child. I'm a mother. I'm a sinner. I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm your help. I'm your dream. I'm nothing in between. You know you wouldn't want it any other way. So take me as I am. This may mean you'll have to be.
This is a Quality News Network. A down day on Wall Street today. We'll have the numbers at the close coming up in our business block. Louis Scooter Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, was sentenced today to 30 months in prison. He was found guilty of lying and obstructing the investigation in the CIA leak case. Libby was also fined $250,000. He maintains his innocence and will appeal. The fourth man who was wanted in connection with an alleged plot to blow up New York's JFK airport has been arrested in Trinidad. He surrendered to police earlier today. In Prague, President Bush said Moscow has derailed the democratic reforms which were once very promising. In the speech, the president celebrated democracy and free societies around the world. Russian President Vladimir Putin has recently criticized the U.S. foreign policy for what he sees as meddling into Russia's sphere of influence. President Bush arrived in Germany afterwards for the start of the G8 summit, which begins tomorrow and lasts 3 days. Pakistani police say they have arrested two suspects believed to have been involved in the kidnapping and murder of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl in 2002. Both men are part of a militant Islamic organization which is linked to Al-Qaeda. In Baghdad today, a police recruiting center was the target of a would-be female suicide bomber. She detonated herself as she was gunned down by guards. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas warned today that the Palestinians are on the verge of a civil war. The factional fighting between Fatah and Hamas has escalated in recent weeks. In southern Ukraine, a mass grave has been discovered which contains the remains of thousands of Jews. They were killed in a concentration camp by the Nazis during World War II. In the latest USA Today Gallup poll of the Democratic presidential candidates finds Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton is virtually tied with Senator Barack Obama at 30-29%. However, that is if former Vice President Al Gore is in the race. If Gore is not included, Clinton gets 37% and Obama has 36%. In that same poll, the Republican field has former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani leading with 32%. Senator John McCain comes in second. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week. Yes.
Taking money out.
Money out, I'm putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
A Canadian researcher has found that children who come from broken marriages are twice as likely to be prescribed attention deficit drugs, such as Ritalin, than children whose parents are together. The research is reported in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. A study of men and women between the ages of 40 to 59 who live in the U.S., Britain, Japan, and China finds that a diet with foods that contain omega-3 fatty acids can lower blood pressure. After media mogul Rupert Murdoch recently offered $5 billion for Dow Jones, the family who owns the company that publishes the Wall Street Journal, billionaire investor Rob Burkle may also make a bid. The Federal Trade Commission will file a lawsuit to block Whole Foods Market from taking over Wild Oats Market, its smaller competitor. The government says the $565 million deal would limit competition in the organic and natural food grocery market. General Motors is speeding up its development of an electric car, the Chevrolet Volt. And the Dow Jones closed down 81 points at 13,595 today. The NASDAQ was down 7, and the S&P was down 8. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $65.61 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And there's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven minutes after the hour. Okay, we'll go back to the phones in a minute. Let me tell you a little story. And Agnes hates this story almost as much as the Thanksgiving story. Many years ago, when our boy was just a little fellow, and this is the curse of literate parents. We have raised children who have fine vocabularies. Many years ago, the Ferg was just talking, and he's always spoken plainly. We never baby talked or anything. I like to stop and look at cars. Can't afford them. Like to stop and look at them. And I had stopped and looked at a vehicle. And I was standing out on the lot. And the windows were open in the van. And the salesman, as car salesmen are wont to do, came bustling out to me. You get them all. One of them's going to buy a car. And so we start up the conversation, and the car salesman has this tan-colored fedora with a leather band on it, a felt fedora, and it looked very much like one that one of our dear friends of the family frequently wore. And at one of those out-of-the-mouths-of-babes moments, and this one's entirely my fault, you can always tell which parent's fault it is by which word gets used. And this one was mine, and you know it. You've listened to the program. The Ferg just up and remarks to the entire vehicle there, everybody in the car, including his horrified mother, "Hey, look, that dirty bastard's got Uncle Randy's hat." And he had no idea that dirty bastard was a pejorative. It's just that he heard his father use the word a lot. I'm not proud of this. But it didn't harm him. It didn't harm anybody else. But he got a stern lecture about not using words like that. And I wonder sometimes about lecturing children on that, when maybe we'd be better off lecturing them on things like don't participate in illegal wars. Don't support illegal wars. It's about 10 minutes after the hour, and a program note. Tomorrow morning, both because Agnes and I, by virtue of me heading out on this trip, Agnes and I are not going to be able to be behind the board producing. So the Cup of Joe radio show and All Foxed Up will be reruns. But then, for that matter, so too will most of Wednesday, with the exception of Guy James. Guy will always be in there, slugging away. God bless him. Then Thursday, we should be pretty much back to normal, except for something special that's going to happen at 6 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday night. Agnes is getting behind the microphone. This has happened, I think, once or twice before. So be there for that. Be supportive. Be there. And if you ever wanted your chance to talk to Agnes, besides being talked to in her hushed tones so as not to go over the microphone like now when she answers the phone, tomorrow's your chance. And then Friday the schedule comes largely back to normal. So that's what that is. Let's go on to the phones. David is calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I was listening to that guy, and I was starting to think about how he desperately wanted something to go back to the 50s, and I just wonder, what age was he in the 50s, and did he see the world for all of its totality? Did he see it completely, or does he just want to see it through that lens? And I think we all do that to an extent. When we listen to an album or we watch a movie, and we say we watch that movie again, and then we say, "Wow, that was such a good movie," and you know, we just want to go back to that time, but then we really don't think about.
We want to go back to the first time we saw it.
Yeah, we also censor out a lot of the mundane and the ignorant, the ignorant and the just bland times. We like to filter it so much through our eyes. We do that with we do that with recording stars, actors. We go, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to be this, you know? And I think when I was listening to that guy, and I was listening to him talk about how he was so he kept saying, I'll tell you, and it just seemed to me that after a while he was this guy who was completely made over in his family. He talked about his mom, and he was completely directly influenced. And this is the crippling effect that we've had in this country. When you look at some place like Japan or China or something, and you look at the difference in the cultures and media, it's night and day. And I think there's a problem there with it stems from so many different topics and issues. And I'm reminded of something that's never talked about, and I haven't heard about it. I read about it online. I found it interesting. This guy put this documentary together. It was about the conservative movement, and what he did was he shot the documentary, and it was about having importing kids to Washington D.C. for sex rituals.
Yeah.
Discovery picked it up. I believe I mentioned this one time on here. Discovery picked it up, and they said, all right, you know, this looks really interesting. We're going to look into that. At the last moment, though, Discovery didn't want anything to do with it. It was listed in the TV guide, and the guy's just basically not been able to get anyone to touch it. So, you know, this kind of thing is just so. I mean, if that guy was to find something like that, he wouldn't believe it. He would say it's propaganda.
And that was the point, to a certain extent, David, in me mentioning to him the vulgarity of George Bush and Dick Cheney, both of whom used the F word in proximity to live microphones. And the American people were prevented from seeing it. You can, in a way...
I'll take a line from Randy. What does she want everyone to do? To just hum guitar solos and go to Joe's Garage?
Okay, yeah. God bless Randy.
Yeah, you know.
But there's still a certain amount of psychic distance between seeing the word in print or hearing the word and hearing bleep and know that it meant F. Okay? There's psychic distance there. And I'm not talking about psychic friends network distance. There's a confrontation. In other words, for instance, bleeping it out leaves weasel room for the right wing to say, well, you know, that's the liberal media. But when you hear George Bush, upright, upstanding, God-licking Christian, say that word, it is immediate, it is in your face, and you must deal with it. And whining about the liberal media will not get you around the fact that the President of the United States is a vulgar little puke.
I don't disagree with you there at all, and I just think that a lot of the problem stems from a lot of infrastructure and a lot of programming and a lot of simple-minded set that they can't think about it any other way because of what their family and to put it in perspective, I have a great uncle. His name is Uncle Carlton, and he was a disciple under Paul.
He was what?
He was a disciple under Falwell.
No.
Yes. I guess they went to school together or something. University, I guess.
And not unless Uncle Carlton went to, like, the Draw Spunky School of Theology in Springfield, Missouri.
I don't know. I think that there's several...
Because Falwell flunked out of community college there in Lynchburg.
I think there's several different universities where, you know, they study. They have these seminars and, you know...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Something like that. Maybe it was a month or something. I don't know. But one of the things that's interesting about that is he was writing letters. He's close to being 90 years old, by the way. He was writing letters and he was saying... I just don't think we can help these people, because he has a mission there. He's a mission in Kenya.
Oh dear, these people.
Yeah, because he says to him, they at the dinner table they talk over him in Swahili and he wants them to talk in English. You see, he's trying to make over the world over there, and the way Western Christians. Okay, I'll correct myself. The way Western Christians think, and they try to influence this, and to an extent, it's the same with conservatives. They have this one way of thinking of what conservative is. When you and I both know, Bob, that conservative was multidimensional. There was a time when you could believe this and believe that.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be for that, but if you're going to toe the line, now you got to toe the line. And that's that. And one of the things that's interesting about it is he says that they took away the names of the African names, of the Kenyan names, of the area and the mission.
And gave them good Christian names?
And he gave them good Christian names. He gave them good Christian Western names, you know?
Yeah.
And it's history revisionism. It's like, I bet you this guy wants to go back to the 40s and the 30s rather than the 50s. It's just about the time you grew up in.
Because the time one grew up in is a time of innocence and a time before one recognizes what a tawdry, filthy mess the world is.
And when you add God into the equation, Bob, it's like this huge weight that even a universal gym soldier couldn't be able to tote. I mean, because any amount of what you think that you want this world to be, you're going to look at it as failure. And that's what my great uncle's going through right now. He's looking at it as, oh, I failed. He had a crisis where, you know, he lost his wife due to illness, and he sold all his possessions in Virginia. Off and on, he was visiting this mission in Kenya that he started. And they go out, he's out there, he's been out there for like 2 years, and he's just going crazy because he wants it this simple way. Why can't these people do this? And there might be a touch of racism involved with the olden ways, that he thinks that the white master, I mean, this is a funny story, they call him Baba.
isn't that the word for father or something?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So they call him Baba, and I mean, he wants everything, you know, done this way. And again, there's just white missionaries working over there. And this is the problem with the whole, with the whole conservative movement at large, whenever we have this discussion, because they don't understand. I mean, people, we have to understand that every single time, you notice we just keep going after all of the minorities. I guess we could make liberals a minority pretty soon if we don't watch our back.
I don't think we have to make us one. Well, I mean, we're not a minority, but
right.
They certainly want to treat us like one.
Just look how they go after, like, the hip-hop culture.
Sure.
They say, oh, why can't they act this way? Why can't they? You know why they can't? You know why certain people can't act in that culture? It's because they took away all of the arts programs, all of these conservatives, all of these Christian right wing.
Wow, David, I don't think that has really been brought up. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And
okay, you don't you object to people standing on the corner and rapping? Well, they wouldn't be rapping if Republicans hadn't taken the damn violins out of the school.
That's what I mean. And who do you think brought it? Who do you think brought the drugs in the community in the first place? What are they going to do? They're going to use it for paperweights?
Yeah, I know.
No.
Wow, that is what happens is you and I get in these little conversations,
yeah.
And they go all over the place, and then you just then it's like a cartoon, and it's like something out of the Warner Brothers, and you just drop the 10-ton weight on my head.
Right,
God, that is so true.
And you know the problem is.
And see that wait, there's a history to that. You know,
yeah.
I'm all context, David. There was a time, and I can't remember the rules exactly as they were promulgated by the British, but they forbade singing in Ireland because the Irish were using song to protest the British. So the next thing you know, you've got the Irish walking around going hum dum diddle 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 la da da
ooh. Right.
And it's a secret language of screw those British and stick a knife in them and turn them. You get what I mean.
And then look what happened.
But it's the same culture that did that pulled the music out of the schools and the arts programs.
But you notice, Bob, every time they try
wow.
to take something back, The community.
Let's be careful with the they-theys.
Okay, I'm talking about the people at large, humans.
Yeah, okay.
And societies and ethnicities and cultures, just in general. Every time the Christians and the conservatives try to pull something, it always gets a bit more darker.
Sure does.
And a bit more angrier at the same time. And a bit more just based. Whereas, you know, When jazz and blues is coming up, and then it starts to evolve, and then what happens is someone decides.
Well, look, Sam Phillips of my hometown, classic example.
Right.
Yeah, Sam Phillips is out there making that race music.
That's right.
Race music. I know, and I've got after you and I are done, David, I want to cover this business out of the filthy Bill O'Reilly. It's one of those phrases that's been banging around in my head for a while because it just there was something archetypal, something almost it's almost like it's scanned or something. But he created this phrase that he uses every day on the program because he's just about got it trademarked and he's trying to use it to hustle books. Secular progressives, and it's just over and over. Secular progressives. You know what? Scan it, and I mean from a poetry standpoint.
Right.
Scan it. It is the same scansion as secular progressives, godless liberals.
Here's an example of what I'm talking about of people who think they can be a guardian or a watchdog. Oh God, do I hate. Do I hate that term, the watchdog, because it gets a visual in my head. A dog or whatever just looking at you. Just looking at you angrily like he knows that it's huge. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I read, it's on GNN.TV. There's a story about they just set up the first aerial drone for L.A. It's called the Sky Steer. I'm not making this up.
No, you're not.
I'm not making this up, the Sky Steer. It flies 30 kilometers per hour, something like that.
And just cruises around.
It just cruises around and looks for stuff.
Well, again, though, that story I read a month or so ago, there are some obscene number of security cameras, government security cameras, within a block of George Orwell's apartment. Yeah, like 50, 80, 180. security cameras within George, within, you know, within walk,
right,
a block of George Orwell's the apartment. The irony is not lost on me. I fear, however, that with a lot of these folks on the other side, irony is not only lost, irony's never been discovered in the first place.
If everyone noticed when that guy was talking, he parsed his words and he said, well, broadcast is limited right now.
Well, he
see right now.
Well, he said straight up that, you know, cable should be regulated by the FCC, and so should satellite, because it comes into your home.
It doesn't stop. He doesn't know that he's a mouthpiece for the Christian conservative Taliban, even though he may not have those views, and he won't be able to stop it or take it back once the ball keeps rolling down the hill. He'd be like, wait a minute, I didn't want this. Too late. We're going forward.
Yeah. Welcome to inertia.
That's what I mean. And a lot of people, that they'll be saying, well, that's crazy. You're talking crazy talk. Like, you know how Tony Snow, he shrugs off everyone. Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
where
exactly
would you get an idea like that?
Oh, that's just nuts. Yeah.
And you know, you just think about those things. And
but you can talk like that when the cancer's gone to your brain.
Exactly. And, I mean, I've heard some sound bites of his show before, and boy, his family must have done a number on him, or someone did. I mean, because it's so much denial. I mean, here's the funny thing: you can have a
he lives on a barge in denial.
I know. You said we can debate about it. We can. If you notice, all of the White House, I don't know if people noticed this, but all of the White House, when they're asked a question that they can't answer, Condi Rice, George, Carl, whoever is there, Dana Perino, they all say, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, Mr. Spock.
Yeah, they say, well, that's
fascinating.
That's interesting. Like whatever we said is below them. Well, that's interesting that you say that.
How novel. Now run along now.
Yeah. I don't quite understand. You're not quite at my plane of reality yet. You need to tune a little bit more.
Yeah, we're not reality based. They're no, they're not. Hey, David, thanks a lot, man.
No problem, Bob.
We'll talk to you soon.
Later.
Bye now. Okay, a little break coming, and when we come back, yeah, the O'Reilly story, and then for those of you who like Dennis Kucinich, an even better reason to hate the living snot out of Glenn Beck. I promise. And your phone calls to 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. It's just that easy. Email comes into Bob at headonradio.com. Yeah, baby. This is America's liberal voice. This is the horn.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hey, kids. There are some questions about what's this new gay conversation radio show coming in June on the Head On Radio Network. Well, the details are safely locked away in my closet located on a dirt road in the rural South. So the next time you're traveling on an interstate highway, staring out into the red state abyss, just smile and think to yourself, honey, we're everywhere.
Baby, I got your number.
I'm Peter Godbold, and welcome to Strictly Confidential. The show premieres June the 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
You can call me, baby. You can call me anytime. You got to call me.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Foxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Foxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Yeah, you heard the promo there talking about the premiere of Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. That's going to be a day of some changes all the way around. The show's his show is premiering at 9 p.m. Eastern, immediately following this program that day, that night. But earlier in the day, we're doing another change, a little flip-flop, if you will. We are changing the times for Cup of Joe and All Foxed Up. We're moving, they're basically just flip-flopping. Cup of Joe is going to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and All Foxed Up is going to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. It's my understanding, talking to the guys, that makes for just generally better, makes lives better all the way around. Because Joe gets home late in the morning, or you know, gets home in the morning from the overnight shift, and that gives him a little bit of time to sort of get his wits together before it's showtime, because we're all working stiffs here of one form or another. And bless his heart, John Fox doesn't have to stay up until, doesn't have to stay up till dogs vomit or whatever the Australians say. Sparrows fart. There we go. He gets to get in bed just a little bit earlier, too, and you know, things are just better all the way around. 25 minutes before the hour, we're halfway done with tonight's edition of Head On. Again, my apologies for not being here, but you will have fun on Thursday when Agnes lights the torch and gets after it. I've already been warned it may well be my Wally Pipp moment. Thanks, Marty. You know who Wally Pipp was. Wally Pipp's the guy who looked at the manager of the New York Yankees one day and said, you know, I just don't feel like going today. And so he put in, the manager put in this guy named Gehrig. And Wally Pipp never played another day of baseball. Nah, I mean, he played, but you get the idea.
No chance.
Okay, a couple of things. Let's go to. By the way, even as we speak, and aren't you tickled with me? I haven't subjected you to it. Maybe we will in the third hour. We'll just check in and see what the freaks are doing. The ten little idiots are on stage at St. Anselm's College in New Hampshire, prattling more of their weird, bizarre, hateful, disgusting, destructive to America stuff. And, yeah, a little bit, maybe after the 8 o'clock, top of hour number 3, maybe after the news there, we'll check in and see what see what's happened. You know, because when you check in with the Republican presidential candidates, it's like just checking in on a room full of people who ate the brown acid. So we'll do that. But, no, right now we go to... Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly and his response to the TB. I mentioned the TB case a couple of times, and it really is it's living proof of what happened. It's like what Susan said about sexuality in America. All this stuff that the right wing complains about, all of this stuff, if not all, certainly most of it, could be combated with a sane and sensible sex education policy. I mean, you have teenagers now, and by the way, I read an article the other day, it includes the abstinence-only crowd that takes those little pledges at their local fundy freak church. They're more likely to do all kinds of sexual stuff that their parents would go, oh, Jesus, no! Than kids who've had normal exposure and non-hung up, non-freaked out exposure to simple information about sex. The Fundy children, for instance, are more wont to engage in oral sex because they think it's not sex. Oh, it's Bill Clinton's fault! No, it's the fault of the Fundies who have instructed their daughters that their hoo-hoos are dirty places filled with demons. No, stop it, Agnes. You can say that Thursday night. You can't say it tonight. And boys whose boy parts are well, they're just little one-eyed demons is what they are. But that's why that happens. But anyway, so you got O'Reilly who's got to come up with something to talk. That's the fun thing. There's a right wing out there, so there's always something for me to talk about. But he's dummied up and ginned up and faked up and phonied up this word, secular progressives, and as I mentioned in our conversation with David, you'll notice that scans poetically just like secular progressives, godless liberals. It's code. That's all it is, code. So you've got O'Reilly out here attacking. This is mind-boggling stuff. Better that you should just hear it yourself. O'Reilly says that I have a hard time handing this to you as just, you know, but it's like a trip to the zoo. I mean, you don't believe that the chimpanzees will sit there and throw caca at you until you've been to the monkey house. I know they're primates. Stop it. But yeah, there's O'Reilly flinging. Yeah, you're in the monkey house when you go to O'Reilly, and he's flinging the caca. Go to it, Agnes.
Okay. So Speaker says he wasn't fully aware of his condition. His wife says he thought he was going to die. Add it up. So what the story comes down to is philosophy of life. Traditional values people put others on a par with themselves. That's a Judeo-Christian tenet. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Like in Iraq.
secular progressives put themselves above all others. That philosophy says, me first, then I'll worry about you. As a nation, the USA has been successful embracing the traditional point of view. But today, that's being challenged. And this TV case is a great example. Are Andrew Speaker and his wife bad people? Probably not. Did Speaker put his own welfare above everything and everybody else? You bet he did. So what do you think about that? What would you have done? Stayed in Italy in a strange place to avoid infecting strangers, or hightail it out of there? Interesting question, isn't it?
So, now remember, you have to substitute godless liberal for secular progressive because that's what it means. So the TB guy is a godless liberal. You got that? Because liberals only think of themselves. That's, yeah, that's right. We only think of ourselves. That's why we're sitting in stunned, slack-jawed horror looking just amazed that even a member of the Bush family, the lowest form of humanity on the planet, that even a Bush could look at Darfur and go, well, the hell with that. Yeah, because we only think of ourselves as godless liberals, secular progressives. That's how we are, according to Falafel Boy. Oh, this is just amazing. We put ourselves ahead of everyone else. And you know, the traditional Christians have put everyone else ahead of themselves. Anybody want to tell that to the Sioux, the Cheyenne, the Arapaho, the Shawnee, the Pawnee, the Iroquois Confederation, the Choctaw, the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Creek, the Seminole? Let's talk about how, on balance, Christianity's been a good thing for America because Christians and traditional values people put themselves behind the needs of the greater good. Jesus. Sickening, isn't it? Let's go to the phones. Mitch is joining us from California. Hey, Mitch, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing good. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. I've been around and around. Going from here in New York. I got this book I wrote. I'm trying to sell it, so I'm trying to get a literary agent. So I'm.
Oh, wow. Best of luck.
Mm-hmm. You know any literary agent?
No. Sadly, God knows I wish I did, because maybe I could get, if I knew any kind of an agent, maybe I could get some voiceover work doing toothpaste ads.
Really, there you go. Yeah, really, that would be wonderful. Anyway, listen, I O'Reilly, he's all knows, right? You know, the guy, I'm Irish, and he makes me ashamed of it. If he was Irish, he'd have to be a Republican Irishman. He'd have to be from, you know, I mean, if he was from Belfast, he'd be on the northern side, man. I mean, I can't even understand this guy, you know, he's pitiful. He's pitiful, O'Reilly, you know? I mean, I don't know, you know, excuse me, I'm just glad the Irish Republican Army and everybody settled up over there. I had a lot going in that, and I had a lot of my heart there. I had lost some
sure.
over there, so.
And, well, you know, and thank heavens for the engagement, say what you will about other aspects of it, thank heaven for the engagement of Bill Clinton in trying to bring peace there.
Yeah,
he was
know,
a
absolutely.
Big part of that.
Absolutely. But you mind if I take... I'm sick of O'Reilly and these...
No, go. Go where you need to go, Mitch.
Look, I got these humorless Republicans, and all I can think of is a famous line by one of my heroes, Wavy Gravy. You know Wavy Gravy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wavy Gravy said, if you ain't got a sense of humor, it just ain't funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, and that's funny.
And that's the truth. If you ain't got a sense of humor, it just ain't funny. And these guys, that's the problem. They just don't get it. You know, you can see them when they try to be funny, you know, and they stagger and stumble. They don't know what humor is. Anyway, I mean, there's a really important issue, and you haven't brought it up. I haven't heard it. I mean, Monday morning is going to be like a massive, like, I mean, people are going to be jumping off roofs. I mean, what's going to be happening when Tony Soprano meets his end? Now, there is what we really need to talk about tonight. Because, I mean, you know, we could talk about, I mean, let's talk about a lesser crime family for a change, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I mean, a crime family with some morals, Mitch.
Right, exactly. Because, I mean, at least Tony, I mean, I don't know, I mean, Tony's a piker compared to Bush, right? I mean, you could feel it. I mean, you know, I mean, he's life for a lot of people, but next to Bush, he's a piker.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, what's going to happen here, buddy? You think he's
I don't know. Does he get shot up? Does he get blown up? Cement shoes? What?
He has to go out. If the show's going to remain with Hart and it's going to remain honest, he's got to go out on his shield, man. He's got to go out like a real gangster, though. He's got to go out. He's got to take that leotardo out with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's got to go out like the gangsters in the old movies, you know? Like Crazy Joe went out when he got hit at Umberto's. You ever heard the story about that?
No.
He was in Crazy. He went to Umberto's clan house, knowing that he was in Joe Colombo's neighborhood, knowing that he had a contract on him. Guy came in. They came in with guns. He always sat in the corner table. He kicked the table over to protect his family. Got up, was riddled with bullets. Went out the front door. Went down the block. Cursing at them, shooting at them, riddled with bullets, finally collapsing against the fire hydrant and going down, cursing, you know, cursing to the very end. And I said, now that's the way Tony's got to go out.
Yeah, I think so.
You know what I mean? I mean, the show's got to happen. It's going to break our hearts because Dan DeFini has made him so goddamn human.
Well, yeah, you're so right, Mitch. And again, it goes into the nature of the conversation we had earlier. Two of the great shows that have run on HBO in the last 10 years. The Sopranos and Sex in the City. I've sat and I've tried to watch the...
And Deadwood.
But I've sat and tried to watch the cleaned-up versions of Sex in the City that run on typical, you know, like TBS or whatever.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. That's why they had the Sopranos there.
It doesn't work.
Yeah,
I mean, they're
going to have Oz there. That should be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the artistic equivalent of putting a drape. Oh, we did that. A drape on Lady Justice.
Exactly.
Okay. It's not the same anymore. The Venus de Milo does not need a pair of overalls.
Well, maybe I don't know what it'll do. All those actors got a lot of work out of it though. Can you imagine all the work they had to go back in and they got voiceover work for 7 seasons?
Oh.
Wow.
Well, it made James Gandolfini.
I don't know. You know, they've been playing around with that witness protection thing. You know.
Yeah.
They've been flirting with that. So they've been throwing that out, like, you know. But see, if he goes witness protection, that would be.
Yeah, but doesn't that give him the opportunity, Mitch, to decide that yeah, we can do another season? I mean, wouldn't that be the perfect possibility of bringing back the Sopranos?
I think HBO would love to do that, but I just don't think he would be honest, man. I don't think Tony would do that. I think Tony's his father's son, you know.
Yeah.
We're all our father's son, you know. I've heard you talk about this too. We were talking about. I heard you guys talking about. Since you were talking to someone about racism one night. And the talk was like, you know, when someone says you can cop to the fact that you're a racist, you'll never be rid of your racism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People say, I'm not a racist. I'm a white man in America. Of course I'm a racist. I'm my father's son. I grew up with all that shit in my head.
Sure.
You know, when somebody cuts me off on the road and they're black, a word goes through my head and I'm ashamed of it. But it goes through my head and it's there.
But it's the process that after it's gone through your head, Mitch, you recognize how wrong and you recognize how, you know.
Right, exactly. But see,
on the other hand, I got that. On the other hand, I got that story from last night about this Leslie Southwick that's been nominated to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, who upheld the use of that word in the workplace and told the guy he could have his job back.
No kidding. Unbelievable. I don't know what kind of world we live in here, but I mean, all I know is it's going to be a different world on Monday morning.
Yeah, I think.
I think you and Agnes have been following the show since the start, right?
Oh yeah. Well, early on, I didn't have HBO, and I had to wait for the first couple of seasons to come out on DVD, and just
yeah, they threw the same with me.
And
yeah,
just sat there in amazement.
I caught up on it in the third season because people had been telling me all about it, and I always, you know, as soon as people tell me about something, the first thing I do is say, yeah, sure, right, okay, and then I don't do it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, somebody recommends something to me.
But you know, the acting. God, I love that. I love the theme song. You know.
Yeah.
But it's the quality, the performances you've gotten there, it's kind of a different direction to go, Mitch. But I just sat down and watched All the King's Men, the movie, and James Gandolfini was in that. And the sad thing in watching that, you know, Sean Penn played the lead, the political strongman, the boss, Willie Stark. Sean Penn had no business playing that role.
Young.
Well, it's not so much that he was just wrong. He was doing one of those Southern accent. He'd been to Southern accent school. He'd had a voice coach, and it put me off as a Southerner. It put me off the way Tom Hanks put me off with his Southern accent in Gump. Okay, but there was James Gandolfini, who was doing a Louisiana accent that sounded like he'd never been further north than Shreveport.
Really, I mean, he's a wonderful actor.
Oh,
another good movie to watch with him and Robert Redford called The Last Castle.
Oh, didn't see that.
It was starred, Robert Redford directed it and stars in it with Gandolfini. Him and Gandolfini are the two leads. And Redford plays like a five star general who's like the most respected, most beloved man in the military. And he does one thing and he pisses off the wrong person. And he gets court-martialed, and he's being sent to federal prison.
Oh, wow.
Gandolfini is the warden.
Oh, I bet that, yeah.
And well. And it pits the two of them against each other because he's a born leader, and Gandolfini is like a manufactured leader, you know. He's a guy that's been put in charge.
Like the generals we have in Iraq now.
Yeah, sort of like that, right, exactly, you know. I got another thing I got to bring up, too. You know, that annoys me. I love Randy Rhoads, and I always have, but, you know, lately... She's sounding like a Democratic groupie. I mean, my God, she drools over these people. I mean, she's making excuses for their votes, and I mean, every time she fawns over them, when she talks to them, and she's so in love with them, and I think she's getting too much access, man.
There is a danger in this business, Mitch.
I'm not asking you to say anything because
No.
If you see any similarities,
I love her to death, but there is a danger, and it's a danger to Ed Schultz. It's a danger to because you know Randy is now officially the star of Air America.
Franken's gone, right?
Franken was created to be that. She was all along. I love what she does.
I thought Malloy was all along, but I thought Randy was right up there second. That's why they pushed.
And Malloy should have been. Malloy was never given the opportunity to be. Okay,
no, that's what I mean. They cut him off.
But what you said is absolutely true. It's an access issue. If I'm, we've gone to groups, Mitch, and I don't mind talking a little inside baseball about how we run things here. We've gone to groups and said, you know, we need you to get on board with funding. We need you to advertise. And what we get in return is, you know, you guys are doing great stuff. We really love what you're doing. Man, that's really brave what you're doing. We don't have any money, but we can line up guests, and we'll be glad to get you Congressman so-and-so and Senator so-and-so. And
I wish my health was better, you know, because I am like the best salesman I know, the best marketer I know. My health was better. I wish I was in a position where I could just... come there and just dig my heels in and just say we're going to this raise $100,000.
Yeah, well, that's
I've raised millions of dollars for theaters here in Los Angeles, the Pasadena Playhouse. You ever heard of it?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I went in there. They needed to do a fundraising. I raised $2 million for them in 6 months.
Gee whiz.
You're alone, you know. But I we had a
but what happens though, Mitch, is these people they want to give. They think they're operating under the assumption that you, being me, measure success by virtue of the number of high and powerful mucky mucks you can get on.
Yeah.
I hesitate to do that too very much because eventually I know that one of these politicians is going to sublimely piss me off.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate to have them on and soft soap them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean.
Because to the extent that they make you, they can also break you.
Exactly, and it sounds to me like Randy's fawning. I mean, she's fawning over people. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, it's because you're not used. It's also because she has not gotten you accustomed to hearing her fawn. She doesn't do fawn. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that when you do hear it, you kind of go, ew.
I know, because she sounds like a 16-year-old girl doing it. You know, like when she fawns over them, it's almost embarrassing. You know. Oh, it's my good friend, and my old Barbara Boxer. How are you, Barbara, my good friend? My friend, but you know, I mean, she, I mean, she,
yeah, but Barbara Boxer went to Connecticut and campaigned on behalf of Joe Lieberman, for Christ's sakes.
Well, I'm just saying, she would, you know, that's what she, but she's doing this with everybody now, Randy. Well, any Democrat she gets on the show, John Murtha, I mean, anybody who will talk to her, she's like, that becomes her next best friend, you know, her next best friend, you know.
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe some things are changing in my own brain, Mitch. I can't afford to be tied up in party anymore.
No, I mean, you know what, Democratic Party. You know what I thought about that last sort of the Sopranos, man. To tell you the truth, we're going. America's going. America, real America. Me and you and Agnes, and my children, and the people like Mike and the people that call this show. We're the ones who are going to the mattresses.
Yeah,
we're going to be going to the mattresses.
Well, that's what I'm trying to. That's what I'm trying to point out. You know, I try to put it gently, but absent the flying bullets, and that is a big part of it. The Civil War's already going on.
It's already gone, man. You know, there's going to be bloodshed too, and it's going to be horrible. It's going to be fucking horrible because even Thomas Jefferson said that the tree of patriotism has to be watered by the blood of patriots. It might have to happen. It might have to happen. Something. I mean, martial law being declared in this country would cause it. Because I don't think there's first of all, you remember the old point when somebody would start some shit with you as a kid and they would say, hey, come on, you want to fight? And you go, yeah, you in one army, right?
Yeah, sure.
Well,
yeah.
People, the whole world can say that to George Bush right now. Yeah, oh yeah, what are you going to do? You in one army, you know? So, I mean, he's to declare martial law. Yeah, with what army? What army is he going to declare martial law with? I mean, is he going to invent an army? I mean, they're all going to have to be mercenaries?
Well, he certainly has a bunch of those in Iraq, doesn't he? 60,000.
If that's the case, we better play it close. We better play it real, real close, man. Because I mean, I really believe that this nation is going to have to get real brave, or it's going to have to get real lost. I there's no other way to say it. I mean, the
well, I'm certainly not going to issue a call to arms or
no, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that. But
no.
There might come a day when that is required of men, and I don't know if that will be required. I hope not. I pray that day never comes. But, you know, this court has become so great, this country, and the sides are so set. The sides are so set and so entrenched and so dug in. And nobody. I mean, progressives. I mean, as progressive, we're not really moved. We're not budging either because we feel like we've been pushed all around. So we're not going to budge anymore. And you know, we have to learn to budge anyway. You know, I brought up the name before Wavy Gravy, and you recognize the name. You know the name Ram Dass?
Oh yeah, Baba Ram Dass.
Yeah, well, Ram Dass. He came back. He was Richard Alpert. He went to India.
Yeah.
We receive those teachings. He has a wonderful teaching that he gives when he tours, and he talks about the problem he had. Hi, Casey, my daughter just stuck her head in the door.
Oh, hi.
The problem he had with Dick Cheney. So every day he would go to his puja table. When he on the table, he would have a picture of his guru. And he'd have a picture of his holy mother or this other great saint of India and Sri Ramakrishna. And every morning he would come out, he would do his meditation, and he would say, good morning, Buddha. Good morning. Good morning, guru. Good morning, this. And he finally had to put a picture of Dick Cheney on the thing, on his puja table. And he had to come out every morning and say, good morning, guru. Good morning, Buddha. Good morning. Hello, Dick. You know?
Yeah.
And when he said that, he realized how far away he was from the man he wanted to be. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You know what I mean? And that's the inner puzzle that we as progressives have to understand, that we have to even in the depth, we have to bring light, man. We have to bring light, you know?
And I do, and it can't be day in and day out. You know, George Bush is evil. We know George Bush is evil.
He is. I mean, like I say, Tony Soprano's a.
That's like trying to do a radio show 3 hours a night saying rain is wet.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
You know, there are only so many words. So it taxes the language after a while to describe rain.
Did I hear something earlier today that did Bush say the F word?
Oh, that was year. I mean, that was a year back. But
oh,
yeah.
I thought he said it today or something.
Well, he is back in Germany, and he's liable to do it because you know he's going to be face to face with Vladimir Putin.
Oh yeah, well he looked at Putin's eyes.
Yeah, and saw his soul.
Yeah, well, what worried me is what Putin looked in his eyes, what Putin saw. That's what worried me.
Well,
looked in his eyes and what he saw an empty suit.
Yeah, well, it's exactly, and that's exactly why Putin can look at George Bush and say, "Okay, you want your missile shield? Cool. We're targeting Paris."
I don't blame him. I don't blame. I mean, you know, what the, I mean.
It's so transparent. It's such a fraud, Mitch. For God's sakes, the State Department with a straight face looked at the Russian ambassador and said, "Well, you know, we're putting the missile defense shield in Poland and Czechoslovakia to guard against Iran."
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Iran doesn't have any missiles that can reach.
Iran is a progressive country of people who want to come into the 21st century. They're dying to come into the 21st century, and they got this guy, Ahmadinejad, I can't even say his name, and they would want to get rid of this guy because they should get Ahmadinejad, Bush, I wish Saddam was still alive, Kim Jong-il, and throw them all in the same goddamn shell. The triumvirate of evil.
Yeah.
You know, put the axis of evil, put them all in the same room and let them do whatever they want to do with each other. Let them smoke crack and do whatever they want to do to each other for eternity. You know?
Oh, God, there's so much truth in that.
Wouldn't that be great? Ahmadinejad in there, Bush, and Kim Jong-il all in the same cell. That would be wonderful. I mean, think of that.
Kim Jong-il could bring the porn.
Hey, man, you talk about pay-per-view. Forget about the Sopranos. Would you pay for that? Hey, man, I mean, you know, one night only, Bush, Kim Jong-il, and...
Steel cage wrestling match.
Booze.
Now, I don't want them to have weapons. I want them to have to go at it mano a mano.
Yeah, well, George Carlin has this routine where he says, you know, he says you give them crack and you give them all the drugs and alcohol they want, and you let them just go nuts on each other. And the one that wins, you line them up against the wall and blow his goddamn brains out.
Golly, yeah, George Carlin, bless his heart. Hey, Mitch, we got to hit the news, brother. So good to hear from you.
You too, man. I'll try to get back off. And, you know, it sounded like you were flailing a little tonight, so I wanted to call you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Love you, brother.
Bye now.
My love to Agnes, too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Later. And news is next. I think, yeah, we're gonna go play with the Republicans and see what the 10 little idiots are saying. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A down day on Wall Street will have the closing numbers coming up in our business block. Lewis Scooter Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, has been sentenced today to 30 months in prison. He was found guilty of lying and obstructing the federal investigation into who leaked the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Libby was also fined $250,000. He says he'll appeal. Trinidad police have a fourth man in custody in connection with an alleged plot to blow up New York's JFK airport. The man surrendered to officers earlier today. In Prague, the first stop on President Bush's European visit, the president criticized Moscow for derailing the democratic reforms, which were once very promising for Russia. However, he went on to say that the Cold War is over. China has joined Russia in criticizing the U.S.-planned European missile defense system. The verbal fencing comes as President Bush arrives in Germany for the start of the G8 summit, which begins tomorrow. Pakistani police say they've arrested two suspects in the kidnapping and murder of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl in 2002. Both men are part of a militant Islamic organization linked to Al-Qaeda. In Baghdad today, at a police recruiting center, a would-be female suicide bomber detonated her explosives as she was gunned down by agents.
Palestine's President Mahmoud Abbas says his territory is dangerously close to civil war. His Fatah party is fighting off the Hamas opposition. Today, Abbas characterized the warfare between the two factions as worse than military clashes with the Israelis. In southern Ukraine, a mass grave has been discovered containing the remains of thousands of Jews killed during World War II in Nazi concentration camps. And the latest USA Today Gallup poll of Democratic presidential candidates finds Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton is virtually tied with Senator Barack Obama. However, that is only if former Vice President Al Gore is in the race. If Gore is not included, Clinton gets 37% and Obama gets 36%. A cyclone is blasting the Arabian Peninsula. Experts say it's the strongest storm there in 60 years. Thousands have fled the low-lying areas. Concerns are also high for the oil-producing Persian Gulf in the storm sites. You're listening to QNN.
To help offset global warming, each of us can help ease pollution of our environment in a variety of ways. At home, use less energy by turning off lights and switching to fluorescent bulbs. Weather-strip doors and windows. Run the dishwasher only when full. Turn your water heater down to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Recycle household trash. U.S. households produce 21% of the country's global warming pollution, and just these few minor adjustments can make a big difference. On the road, slow down for better gas mileage, drive less, and keep your vehicle tuned up and tires properly inflated. For more information on what you can do to help reverse the effects of global warming, contact the Environmental Defense Fund online at fightglobalwarming.com. This Environmental Minute has been provided in the public service by the Quality News Network.
British scientists say they'll use stem cells to cure macular degeneration, a common age-related blindness. Human embryonic stem cells will repair damaged retinas. Human trials are about 5 years out. Pharmaceutical giant Pfizer has been hit with a $7 billion lawsuit by the government of Nigeria. The government says the drug company conducted experiments on children a decade ago that killed and disabled the youth. And a Canadian researcher has found that children who come from broken marriages are twice as likely to be prescribed attention deficit drugs, such as Ritalin. The research is reported in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. The federal government reports gambling on U.S. Indian casinos earned tribes $25 billion last year, an 11% increase from the year before. And Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said today that even if the housing slump continues, the U.S. economy will rebound. Analysts say he gave no indication that the Fed would lower interest rates anytime soon. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $65.69 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 81 points at 13,595. The NASDAQ was down 7 points, and the S&P 500 was down 8. There's more, of course, at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
All right, 8.5 minutes after the hour, as I noted, the 10 little idiots are squaring off at St. Ansel's College. You know, St. Ansel and the Fighting Altar Boys, Division 4C3 NCAA football program. No, I'm kidding. But they've already been apparently presented the question, knowing what you know now. You know, this is knowing what you know now. Was it a mistake to go into Iraq in 2003? And honest to God, it was like Sunday morning at the IHOP. There were so many waffles around. So let's check in with the 10 little idiots and see what they're doing.
Very quickly to get 10 candidates down to some 100 to 150.
All right, bear with us just a second here. Okay, here we go.
You can stop talking now.
Nope. Ah, they're not being cooperative. Dadgummit. Okay, let's, give it just a second. This thing can't be over already. Yeah, turn out the lights. The party's over. Gee whiz. The Democratic debate lasted a little longer. We did that 2003. We invaded Iraq in 2003? Who knew? Gee whiz. I can't believe this thing's already over at an hour and 10 minutes. Don't most of them last like, you know, an hour and 30 or so?
Maybe they're taking a potty break.
No, they're not taking a break. Oh, let's see. Some of the low lights or highlights. Let's see. According to Mitt Romney about the war in Iraq, we knew what we knew at the point we made the decision to get in. At this stage, the right thing is to see if we can stabilize the central government. Huh? Does that guy speak in English, or have I just lost the ability to comprehend it? Let's see. Giuliani, no, it was not an error to attack a country that had never attacked us. And John McCain says his problems with Iraq is not that the U.S. invaded, but the war has been mismanaged. And they just did the war wrong. Oh, for heaven's sakes. And, oh, by the way, if you didn't know by now, the official referent term for Fred Thompson, Mighty Mouse. Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee said, it's what we might call the Mighty Mouse candidacy. You know, here I come to save the day. And, you know, it's funny, that's the Mighty Mouse theme, but come on, show of hands in the chat room, even though I'm not there. How many of you here... that line, here I come to save the day and see Mighty Mouse. Okay, how many of the rest of you see Andy Kaufman standing on stage lip-syncing to the Mighty Mouse theme? Culture. It's all about the culture. So, oddly enough, the coverage that I'm reading here, Bupkus about Ron Paul. Was he not invited? Was he too spooky for them this time? You just don't know. Well, let's see. 13 minutes past the hour, and let's go to the phones and talk to Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you, Bob?
Well, I'm doing okay. We got things are settling down a little bit. Starting to take a look at what's going on around the country, and I don't like what I'm seeing.
No, it stays pretty creepy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or is it just? Have you heard something I haven't heard, and it's getting worse?
No, it's the same. It just keeps going on and on and on. It's dissembling, Bob. It's dissembling. You know, when you disassemble the language and twist it like Bill O'Leary.
Yeah, dissembling, lying, being untruthful, yes.
Yeah, dissembling. You know, it's just like, these, what are we now? We're called secular...
Secular progressives.
Progressives.
Yeah, and that has as many syllables in it as godless liberals.
I mean, it's disheartening to have so many different handles. I mean, I've got hundreds of different hats, you know what I mean? I mean, hats I've collected, stuff like that, you know, and it's like every time you turn around, they give you another hat.
Yeah,
now we've got to wear this one that says we're secular progressives.
Yeah, I can't keep up with whether I'm a secular progressive, a godless liberal, communist atheist. There's too many to keep up with.
It confuses one. You know what I mean? Please give us one label. Call us what we are. You know, we are human beings. We are just that, Bob. We're human beings. We love our families. We care about our nation. We care. about those that want to change us and make us think in their way of thinking. We don't want to think like a conservative. We want to think with our own mind. We want to use it and look at the issues and decide, is this the best way we should go as a country? Is this the best way? Is this the best person for the job? So absolutely, when these dinos, these Democrats in name only up there in Congress and in the Senate, you know, when they vote like conservatives, then we have to address the Democrats or the Dinocrats or whatever they are, because they're not Democrats, Bob. They never have been. They never will be. They are people that believe they understand what a liberal is, but they're not liberals, Bob. They're not liberals like George Washington.
There are some. Sadly, the ones that we needed most left this earth. I think of Paul Wellstone.
Few and far between, kind of like hen's teeth. Count one. Go pick one out of the Senate right now. You know, you call Byron Dorgan and that Kent Conrad.
Yeah, the closest.
Think about that name, Conrad. It's Conrad. He was a con when he came to us early on, and when he wanted to run for the Senate, he was a con man then, and he's a con man now. He always was a con.
Well, I'm trying to think of Russ Feingold. Okay, there's somebody with some decent credentials in the Senate, but frankly, there's not a lot of other ones.
No, they're not. There aren't. But I do wish you a wonderful endeavor wherever you're going for the next few days, and we'll be here to kind of look after your lady and make sure that she's represented, and we will probably call in. And
keep the phone lights flashing, Bob.
Keep them flashing, and make.
Now, bear in mind, she's going to have to do it like I do it when I when I run a show by myself. She's not going to be able to have any idea who's on the phone.
That's
so.
What I'm hoping, and I think maybe if I get lucky, I might hook some two gals up and see if I can't get a conversation that I'd love to listen to.
All right, Bob. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and just keep your nose to the grind. Don't, what's that, darling? Oh, the pink ladies did send me a message, and the only thing was I got it a day late and a dollar short.
Oh, darn. Well, our pal up there who comes into the chat room when she can and carries on a little bit, I get a lot of email from her. I hope you guys are in contact now, so she can just drop you a line whenever they're up to something.
Well, I'll take that under advisement. Okay.
Okay.
I'm rather sly in what I do too. Kind of. I'm not anonymous, and I'm not hidden. I'm not hiding out in the hills and the hollers of West Virginia. I'm up here in the high plains, and you can see me with. If you got one of them satellites, just look down. I'm up there waving at George Bush, and I'm...
Oh, I don't think you're waving.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm waving. I'm waving the middle index.
The one finger salute.
The one finger wave. If I knew that, it was passing, Glenda's working on bending her fingers back, and she says, I can almost do it, she says. I can almost...
Bless her heart.
Yeah, well, that's what we do, because it's all we can do right now, but... I don't think it will ever come down to another civil war between the West and the East, as this Brenda was looking at one of these, national rags in the supermarket the other day. She said, oh, they're talking about we're going to have a civil war. And I said,
Now, the other side doesn't have guts enough to go face-to-face, Bob. That's the thing.
No, but the thing is...
They're trying to subvert and pervert the government so that we can the likes of us can just be rounded up.
Well, they're not going to round us up, Bob. that's the funny thing. They'd have to round up 90% of Americans at that time because, you know, right now it's close to 75 or 80% that are against this war in Iraq. And now there's that many fence jumpers that have slid off that right-wing side, and they're actually against this right-wing takeover of their values.
You know what scares me, Bob?
Hmm.
I remember a time when we thought there was that we couldn't possibly have a president worse than Ronald Reagan. I remember a time when we thought, come on. When George Bush the first was in office and everybody said, you know, Dan Quayle was the reason that we all prayed for the safety of the president because he was a moron was a heartbeat away from the Oval Office. And we used to, you know, and we would ask ourselves questions like, oh my God, could you imagine if George H.W. Bush died, could you imagine that?
What?
Then Dan Quayle would be president? Oh my God, it'd be awful because he's so stupid. There couldn't be anybody stupider in the office of the president than Dan Quayle. Well, we got a guy stupider than Dan Quayle in the office of the president. And here's what scares me. Here's what wakes me up at 3 o'clock in the morning with the beady little sweat along my hairline. There's a guy out there. There's several of them who are even dumber than George Bush who want to be president. Let that settle in, Bob. We think George Bush is so awful, and he is. Guess what? There's worse.
In the wings. There's worse ones in the wings. I will just absolutely...
Fred Thompson thinks that Nixon did nothing wrong.
Fred Thompson is not an intellect. He is what we used to refer to as sexual intellectual. You know, that's just another effing idiot. Yeah. All right.
Took me a minute. Sorry.
Okay, but I didn't use the vernacular because I wouldn't want to upset our fine up. Standing right winger that was listening, or you had the conversation with earlier, which kind of I had to
leave the room.
No, I had to just kind of, you know, hold myself very, very, very softly and say, "You will not up Chuck. You will not up Chuck. You just won't up Chuck." You know.
Sorry to do that to you, Bob.
No, that's all right because I love the way that you had a civil discourse with a person that had no semblance of sane thinking. It was just, it's me. Oh, gee, I just wish I could go back to when I was 10 years old. Then everything would be much better because Mommy and Daddy would look after me. And that's what this nation is. It's a bunch of people that want someone to watch over them and take care of them. And, you know, it's sad that we've come to that point where we have to go to these pundits, like Limbaugh. He was just a perfect example of that. He came in at the perfect time and acted and as the father figure, the person that could tell him what to think, when to think, and when to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I taught my children one principle. No matter how mad I am or how angry I am or how much I rave or rage or curse or whatever, don't listen to me then, okay? Think outside the box, because when I'm in that state of mind, I'm stuck in a box and I'm caught in my own dilemma, my own insanity. And when I'm getting mad about something, don't listen to me because I'm not really there. I'm off in another universe. And you think outside that box. Think outside of it, because if you cannot get away from it and you think that I'm the perfect father figure, I'm not this Leave It to Beaver, you know, kind of guy that comes home and slaps June on the, you know, behind and says, "That was one fine roast," you know, or the first, you know what? The first, what was that, pornography that was ever broadcast on the American airways, you know what that was? was?
What was that?
That was when June Cleaver.
Oh, yeah.
Looked at Ward one morning, and he said, she said, "A little rough on the beaver last night, weren't you, Ward?" See, and that's the same kind of thing you were talking about earlier, is it not?
Yep.
You draw an innuendo, and guess where the picture comes from? It's not what was said.
It's what's in your mind.
It's what's in your mind, and if your mind's in a gutter, you can find something that someone said to you that you can put in that gutter. Well, anyway, my friend, have a very, very eventful but uneventful trip. In other words, get out there, do business, take care of it, get it square.
Get home.
Stay on the air. We need you more than you need us.
Well, thank you. I don't know if that's true or not, Bob.
It is true. Just ask Agnes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Just ask Agnes. I don't have 3 hours of this. She has to put up with me, and I don't know if the marriage could stand it.
Well, she's got to put up with us, too, and that's, you know, it's a burden for her. You know, it's a cross she'll have to bear. But, hey, we're there. We'll be here.
So many crosses. So many bears. Thank you, Bob. You have a great evening. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right. You too, my friend.
Take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. And coming up on the bottom of the hour, we'll take a little break and we'll come back. Okay, you heard the sickening O'Reilly thing. So what? O'Reilly's sickening. That's what O'Reilly does. Going to come back with some icky stuff for you from everybody's favorite junior Nazi, Sacred Underwear Glenn Beck. But as I said, first, a break. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
That crazy little bastard, he's involved your poor father in something.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Straighten out that chair.
Imagine this. My chair is straight, and all the other chairs are out of order. Now, here's a real mind-bender for you, right?
Liberals need to take responsibility. They can't run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide.
Republicans suck! Suck!
28 minutes before the hour. Agnes digs this tune. She's just getting all worked up for Thursday. That's what she's doing. Let's go to the phones. I haven't heard from our good buddy Chris in Alabama in a long time. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Mitt Romney just stood up in the debate. He almost fell, and his tentacles grabbed him. He's standing up straight. He's answering the question. Thank God. He could have got hurt.
Are they back to debating again? We couldn't get to debate.
He's standing up. He almost got hurt. Can you imagine the hair breaking off? And we've got a dangerous thing we've got to look out for. Fred Dalton Thompson, he's about to hit the campaign trail. National health emergency. He thought the TB scare was bad. Before he goes out and starts kissing babies, we need to remind ourselves he dated Lori Morgan.
I know that got mentioned last night on the program, Chris.
Oh, man, he dated Lori Morgan for a while, and Lori Morgan, you know, was saying, we used to talk that I got a call from another guy. Hold on. Okay.
You're awful.
Talk about him running for office. So, you know, he slept with Lori Morgan. He needs to be tested before he goes out and starts kissing babies.
Well, you know, and
that's a social disease right now.
Well, but yeah, I mean, before he starts kissing babies, we better be, you know, at least warn the parents that he might marry one of them.
Well, you know, he grew up. He was
his wife is ago. 4 years younger than his daughter.
Yeah, yeah. He was born not far from here. Lived in Florence, where I am, and where
did he live in Florence?
Yeah, he grew up in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee.
That I know.
Here. They still haven't recovered. That's why they have the body farm where they research the dead bodies and the insects. That's probably why Bill Bass had to start that up there in Lawrenceburg. They still had to get the stink out.
Ew.
But what I want to know is, the media, Bush's nephew is signed on, reportedly, to help Thompson in his campaign. Everybody's going on, he's 6 foot six. He's 6 foot six. Well,
just like Lincoln.
Robert Novak, old puppy blood himself, in his column mentioned Fred Dalton Thompson was at this big luncheon, and he's 6 foot seven.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
So I'm gonna leave it to you. I'm gonna let the audience decide why Novak gave him an extra inch.
Oh, what are we going to do with you?
I don't know. I mean, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven. He's the only one reporting it.
Oh, you know, well, nah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
I don't know. But, hey, I could be Fox. I could be Fox News, and it don't have to be true.
Yeah.
I could be Glenn Beck, you know.
Oh.
I could stomp around in my Nazi outfit and go, I'm not wearing this.
I am not a Nazi.
We don't need to see your papers. We've seen your papers already. We have the chat log. We have the phone calls.
Yeah, no kidding. You doing all right, Chris?
Now that I'm back, yeah, sure.
Tell people you're back from where?
New Orleans.
Care to share a little?
Which part?
Any part you care to share.
The political ramifications after the storm. I heard quite a few political talks. Obama and Hillary were down there at the same time.
Oh, yeah?
And I heard quite a few...
Well, is New Orleans back? We had another listener who was down there about a month or so ago who said, you know, much of it is still just nothing but devastation.
Man, let me tell you. You're my buddy. I consider you a really close friend. So I can tell you, just privately between you and me and your dear wife...
And a few hundred thousand other people, yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible. There are entire counties, not cities, counties that haven't been touched yet. Counties.
Untouched.
I mean, it is terrible.
What was the nature of the work you were doing down there?
We were working for, with my brother-in-law, construction. We were working in a mid-level, I guess you could say, community. Houses that are worth about $200,000. That if they were here in Florence, they would be worth about $60,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're off Canal, they were off Canal Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh my God, don't go to New Orleans. It's dangerous. Well, we were living in Marrero, the other side of the river, away from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And we had crackheads trying to break in our house. We had crackheads going up and down our street.
Is it safe to say that everything is still broken down there? I mean,
well, most of the Ninth Ward moved to generally where we were living. The night we moved in, a 19-year-old shot a 14-year-old in the back of the head. The next street over. Four out of the 2 months I was there, 4 days. There were only 4 days that the police were on our street arresting somebody. And we lived in a pretty reasonably good area.
Jesus. Are you going back?
No.
Had enough?
Well, put it this way. When you go to Home Depot to get some materials in the morning, the Mexicans down there won't exactly beg for work. Sometimes they will jump in the back of your truck and say they're going with you.
Oh, gee.
So you have to physically remove them from the truck? Sometimes?
Wow.
Let's just say I excelled in that area.
God, that's heartrending, Chris.
Well, when you've told them 5 times and threatened them...
Oh, no. I mean, the fact that, the desperation level is that high.
Yeah, well... But you can't even go to the laundromat without being propositioned by someone who has 3 crack pipes. And it's right down the street. I mean, literally right down the street from where the New Orleans Saints practice.
Well.
You think that would be a pretty reasonably good area? No. It's terrible down there. It is absolutely awful. Now, it was in the local media down there. There is seawater leaking out under the levees or whatever down there in the Ninth Ward. Seawater. We were in Marrero. The next town over is Harvey. The levee in Harvey is about to go. Where we lived, we were 200 and something yards away from an oil refinery. So we were gradually seeing the gas prices go up about every week. And get up out of bed, go out and get in the truck, go to work, and look down the street at an oil refinery. Boy, that really makes you appreciate this administration.
Just a little bit more.
Just a little bit more. It's just awful down there.
Good to have you home, though. I know your wife and daughter are thrilled to have you home.
Oh, they're thrilled to have me home, and it's good to write the Mansell Report again. But I tell you what, I'm being especially vicious to them these days.
Good. MansellReport.blogspot.com?
Yeah, not this one, but the one before it was called Chalk Marks and a Greasy Wind. It's about Dick Cheney.
Okay. Mansell Report, MansellReport.blogspot.com.
Yeah, the Mansell Report.
The Mansell. See, we go through this.
We go through this. That's right. That's
okay,
right.
It's got V on the front.
Yeah, themansellreport.blogspot.com.
Go there. Read it. Okay.
It's fun.
Chris, good to talk to you. Hope we'll hear from you soon.
Oh, you will.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 20 minutes before the hour, and like I said, I'm a fan of Dennis Kucinich. I watched some excerpts of the debate the other night. And once again, the guy's the most reasonable man in the room. Easily. So, yesterday was June the 4th. It was Monday. It was the day after the Democratic debate. And I guess you could argue, the old maxim from the PR world is that there's no such thing as bad publicity. So, what is this, some sort of a victory? I don't know, it's not. This is just more political sleaze from the right. You know, I wish Bob Peters had been back, was still on the phone with me. I'd love to play this for him. Agnes, this is Glenn Beck from Monday.
Okay, so I guess we did, make that just me that sees the tongue ring. You see the tongue ring, and then you're starting to think of things with Dennis, and I don't want to go there. I don't think you're the only one there, Glenn, but
show me the picture of her again.
This is
now, wait, pause. I want you to understand something. They're talking about Dennis Kucinich's wife. They're talking about Dennis Kucinich's wife, his beautiful wife, his elegant wife, his wife who exudes charm and class and compassion, real compassion, who before she met Dennis Kucinich, who before she wedded Dennis Kucinich, spent time in Africa working with people that Glenn Beck would not deign to spit on.
She's very tall compared to Dennis.
No, Dan just said in my ear, isn't she just about 8 feet tall? No, she's not about 8 feet tall. He's 2 feet tall.
Yes.
He's Gollum.
I believe she's
you
below
take
average.
His shirt off and put him in a loincloth, and he's Gollum.
Wait. Guess what? Guess what? You hear that? Glenn Beck wouldn't be doing that if Dennis Kucinich wasn't talking more common sense, more hope for America than anybody else on the stage at the Democratic debate. Because this is what you're getting here. This is a masterclass in Republican political philosophy. Demean, minimize, dehumanize. Okay, go on.
She's probably only like 3'9", but next to him, he's... Ooh. And that might also be part
How
of the
How did that happen?
It might be part of the reason she looks good, too, because she's standing next to him.
You think it's dope?
Here it comes.
I don't know. I don't understand the question.
I'm wondering if it's some sort of, what's that date rape drug? What is the one that...
GHB? Come on.
Yeah, but it's
know what
powerful
the date
enough
drug
to
is.
Actually knock you out, but it's powerful enough to, make you think that you're not standing next to Dennis Kucinich and make it out with him.
Maybe it's some other form of that.
What would be the drug that would be just powerful enough to make you not really realize that you're making out with Dennis Kucinich?
That's called alcohol. Ether?
I was thinking cyanide.
Cyanide?
That'd be the only thing that would really...
Wait. Do you remember... Why? Somebody explain to me, please, why these filthy right-wing Republican sons of bitches can't engage in political discourse without having to go to a murder metaphor. Cyanide. Do you remember when Ann Coulter got up and suggested that someone put rat poison in Justice Stevens' creme brulee and said, "Just kidding"? And now Glenn Beck is suggesting that Mrs. Dennis Kucinich be given cyanide.
All the sense is enough. Even then, your dead body would be like...
Dennis Kucinich is stuck in my mouth.
Maybe it's just me.
I'm sure they have a lovely relationship. So,
got that? You got that? Where's Bob Peters when we need him? And see, that's what I was trying to raise in this conversation with him. It's not always the word. Gosh, Glenn Beck didn't say booger, so it must be okay. He must meet minimum standards of decency. Imagine that. Imagine that. In Republican world, Glenn Beck is decent. Never mind what they consider to be indecency. Consider that the Republicans look on Glenn Beck, Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, and the filthy rest of them as decent. Sometimes you have to walk around, and look through the window from the other direction. It's not a question of indecency in this country. It is a question of what is considered to be decent. And Glenn Beck suggesting that Mrs. Kucinich take cyanide is deemed to be decent. I'm all free speech. I'm all the freedom, civil rights. You know me. But God Almighty, how is that legitimate political discourse? At best, it is juvenile. I tend to think that it's more like sociopathic or psychotic. He's sitting there doing a verbal description of Mrs. Kucinich being dead and aware that Mr. Kucinich is practicing necrophilia on her. Among other things, it's not even original. It's an old Sam Kinison joke. Please. I know. I'm looking at the chat room. People are disgusted. I'm disgusted. But we must understand what we are up against. I had what I thought was a very nice little conversation with a right-wing person who is very concerned about dirty words in broadcast. But I told him point blank that a right-wing hero, Rush Limbaugh, routinely, repeatedly, and for nothing other than gratuitous purposes, used the word dick in its sexual connotation on the air, prime time, 2 p.m. Eastern, and he couldn't bring himself to denounce the hero of the right wing, Rush Limbaugh. It happens all the time. They won't, whether it's morality in media or that other weird, the parents' television resource, what the heck ever, the L. Brent Bozo the third runs that. And they won't be denouncing this audio description of necrophilia. Do you remember why Howard Stern had to leave over-the-air terrestrial old-fashioned buggy whip radio? It was because occasionally he would have conversations regarding anal sex. And he would play butt bongo on the air. Juvenile, sure. Homicidal, no. Psychotic, no. Mrs. Kucinich, however, gets suggestions that she is a drug user. You know, oddly, do you realize they fell in love within the first 2 weeks that they had known each other? Love at first sight. And this filthy animal, Glenn Beck, makes light of it. And him, a Mormon who values the family relationship. God, let's go to the phones and talk to Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm okay, you?
All right, I'm heading to the conservative part of the country here, but maybe the whole country is now. I'm heading to Birmingham.
Oh, dear.
I've already seen a bumper sticker. It says it has a W on it.
Oh, you're back home, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Just kind of eerie feeling. Birmingham has nothing but talk radio shows, 24/7 conservative stuff, including Glenn Beck.
I can't imagine how any decent church-going person, Alan, could stand how could you not call the station that carries him and says, you know, I don't want this filth on my radio?
Oh, I have. They won't listen to me. They said their stations are balanced.
Oh, really? What liberal does the station that carries Beck carry?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's
okay.
30 minutes of one guy who's semi-liberal, and I call him sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
When I get into arguments on this TV radio out here, I like you to know that the first thing these right-wingers would do is start calling me names.
Oh, sure.
That's the only thing they could do is call names. If I just get past that name call and stuff, then we get to serious business. And I start talking about that stuff that Tom Hartman talks about all the time, about economics and how the right-wingers are hurting us economically. And then I start making sense and start getting to their heads.
Yep, exactly. So you're home now?
Not yet, but almost. I'm going to be there for about 2 days, and I'm going to try to find a DVD. If I could find it, I'll send it to you. I think it's very interesting.
Okay, wonderful. I look forward to seeing it.
Okay.
Well, you stay safe, Alan. Good to hear from you.
Okay, thanks.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye. And to Susan in Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome back.
Yeah, I just had one comment. Turn it around, if you could, in your imagination. I don't suggest you actually do this. I'm more decent than Beck is. But imagine what would happen if, say, somebody from our side of the fence took those exact words, only instead of Mrs. Kucinich, you put Laura's name or Mrs. Cheney's name.
Or Mrs. Fred Thompson.
Yes.
4 years younger than Thompson's daughter.
Yes, exactly. The right wing echo chamber would go completely caca.
Yeah.
You know it, and I know it.
Sure, and you know, Katie Couric would talk about it, and Brian Williams would talk about it. It would be a news story. Ah, this, you know, that's just the lighthearted, fun-loving Republicans. That's just humorous comedy radio. Ha ha.
Yeah, right. Right up until the time you start calling their women that.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd bring that up.
Well,
have a nice night.
You too, Susan. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Sure. Maybe we all need those little rubber bracelets. And WWRWD, what would the right wing do? Because this is certainly one of those cases. What if I suggested that Laura Bush... Well, wait, they're not having sex anymore anyway, so... You know. What if I suggested that Mrs. Fred Thompson, 4 years younger than Fred's daughter, had to use a date rape drug in order to have sex with that big ghoulish freak Fred?
Just kidding. It's just a joke. It's humorous radio.
Jesus.
Bob, no drugs were involved. It's money.
The biggest, most powerful drug of all.
Exactly. And Glenn Beck, you have to remember, this is the same man that had to use eye drops in his eyes to appear that he was crying when he did a Make-A-Wish segment on children who had cancer.
Oh, well, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, you know...
And this is a guy who's an ex-alcoholic, ex-drug addict, just like his hero, Rush. You know, you can't do right-wing radio, Agnes, without being a junkie of some sort. But you know what? We're out of time. Plum slap out of time. And I'm out a week.
And we'll be seeing you all Thursday night.
Yeah, seeing on the radio.
I can see.
Yeah, I know you can. You're just like Romper Room.
That's right. Doobie.
Yes, you've got your doobie. Thanks, everybody. I enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. I will never again, for the rest of my life, ever have the chance to use that great Bob Peters joke again.
But it was perfect timing.
Guy walks into a barber shop. Bob Peters here? Nah, I just got here.
I appreciated him coming on.
I appreciated him coming on, too. It took some guts. But anyway, thanks, all of you. And I'll look to be talking with you again Friday evening. You get Agnes on Wednesday, you get a bunch of Agnes on Thursday, a bunch of reruns tomorrow. Sorry, that's how it works out. In the meantime, of course, our IT professional is Peter Godbold, also the future host of Strictly Confidential. All of our streams, our archives, and our podcasts are managed by Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, really, at whiterosesociety.org. Ben never sends a bill. John Fox is our engineer in Sydney, Australia. And the United Brotherhood of Carpenters helped us get started. And we appreciate so much their joining with us to save the American dream. Liza, give your mother a break and get some sleep. And always, always... RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Five years.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
The Quality News Network. The Space Shuttle Atlantis is on the way to the International Space Station after a picture-perfect launch under ideal weather conditions at Cape Canaveral, Florida, 22 minutes ago. The shuttle's payload includes new solar panels to power the station. Two astronauts will take a spacewalk on Sunday to install them. The Defense Department is appealing the rulings handed down this week in the military trials of two Guantanamo Bay detainees. The Pentagon says it's a matter of semantics that led to the dismissal of their charges, and the issue should be settled quickly. One man was once Osama bin Laden's chauffeur. The other one reportedly killed an American soldier with a hand grenade. In a brutal show, four scores of al-Qaeda and Iraq terrorists stormed a police chief's house this morning, killing his wife, 13 others, and kidnapped three of his adult children. The police chief wasn't even home. Al-Qaeda in Iraq is getting bolder in their attacks as insurgents join coalition forces and turn against the terrorists. In the mountainous Kurdistan region on Iraq's northern border with Turkey, Iraqi Kurds are battling the Turkish army. Fatah al-Islam fighters are into their 20th day of defiance against the Lebanese army. The Al-Qaeda-inspired fighters have dug deeper into the Palestinian refugee camp north of Tripoli. One of the world's major international arms traffickers has been arrested in Spain, and two of his cohorts have been detained in Romania. The three are charged with selling millions of dollars worth of missiles and other weapons to the FARC narco-terrorist organization in Colombia. President Bush stopped in Poland today to thank its leaders for allowing part of the planned U.S. missile defense system be stationed in their country. Russian President Vladimir Putin suggested several alternative locations in the last couple of days. The bipartisan U.S. immigration bill has been pulled from the Senate floor. Last night, the White House-sponsored legislation failed to get enough votes. The sheriff's office and the courthouse are not on the same page in Los Angeles. Yesterday, Paris Hilton was released from jail early. Today, the judge told the sheriff to go pick her up at home and put her back in jail to complete her 45-day sentence. In L.A.'s overcrowded jail system, most inmates only serve 10% of their sentences. Scientist Edwin Trasman, who invented Cheese Whiz and the process for freezing McDonald's French fries, has died of a heart attack at 91. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying.